to find something familiar. He stopped suddenly, tense and listening.
Hello?
He whispered. She stood still, waiting for the right moment. For 10 minutes, he alternated between wildly yanking against the restraints and trying to listen around the harsh noise of his breathing.
Help!
He finally called out loudly.
Is anyone there?
Hello, Daniel, she answered in a quiet voice. His head jerked back, stretching his throat, as he looked for where the voice was coming from. It wasn't the instinct of a professional soldier, she noted, to expose the throat that way.
Who's there? Who is that?
It doesn't really matter who I am, Daniel.
Where am I?
Also not relevant.
What do you want?
He half shouted. There you go. You got it. That's the question that matters. She walked around the table so he could focus on her, though she was still lit from behind, and her face would be mostly shadows.
I don't have anything, he protested. No money, no drugs, I can't help you.
I don't want things, Daniel. I need information. And the only way you're getting out of here is if you give it to me.
I don't know anything. Nothing important. Please, stop it!
She snapped loudly, and he sucked in a shocked breath.
Are you listening to me now, Daniel?
This part is really crucial. He nodded, blinking fast. I have to have this information. There is no other option. And if I have to, Daniel, I will hurt you until you tell me what I need to know. I will hurt you badly. I don't necessarily want to do this, but it doesn't bother me to do it either. I'm telling you this so that you can decide now, before I begin. Tell me what I want to know, and I will free you. It's that simple. I promise I will not harm you. It will save me time and yourself a lot of suffering. I know you don't want to tell me, but please realize that you are going to tell me anyway. It may take a while, but eventually you won't be able to stop yourself. Everyone breaks. So make the easy choice now. You'll be sorry if you don't. Do you understand? She had given this same speech to many, many subjects in her career, and it was usually quite effective. About 40% of the time, this was when the subject would start confessing. Not often finish confessing, of course, and there was always some exploratory work to do, but there was a decent chance the first admission of guilt and some partial information might be surrendered now. The statistic varied depending on who she was giving the speech to. Roughly half the time with most military men, the first divulgence would happen before any pain was administered. Only 5 to 10% of the actual spies would say anything without some physical distress. Same numbers for religious zealots. For the low-level toadies, the speech worked 100% of the time. The man in charge had never once confessed a single detail without pain. She really hoped Daniel was just a glorified toady. He stared back at her while she spoke, his face frozen in fear. But then, as she was concluding, confusion narrowed his eyes and pulled his brows together. It wasn't an expression she'd expected. Do you understand me, Daniel? His voice bewildered.
Alex? Alex, is that you?
This was exactly why one didn't make contact with a mark beforehand. Now she was off script. Of course that's not my real name, Daniel, you know that.
What?
My name isn't Alex.
But you're a doctor. You helped me.
I'm not that kind of doctor, Daniel, and I didn't help you. I drugged you and I kidnapped you. His face was sober.
You were kind to me.
She had to control a sigh. I did what I had to do to get you here. Now I need you to focus, Daniel. I need you to answer my question. Are you going to tell me what I want to know? She saw doubt in his expression again. Disbelief that she would actually hurt him. That this was really happening.
I'll tell you anything you want to know. But like I said, I don't know anything important. I don't have any bank account numbers or, I don't know, treasure maps or anything. Certainly not anything worth all this. He tried to gesture with his trust hand. Looking at himself as he did, he seemed to realize for the first time that he was naked. His skin flushed, face, neck, and a line down the center of his chest, and he pulled automatically against the restraints as if trying to cover himself. His breathing and heart rate started spiking again. Nudity. Whether black ops agents or just low-level terrorist gophers, they all hated it. I don't want a treasure map. I'm not doing this for personal gain, Daniel. I'm doing this to protect innocent lives. Let's talk about that.
I don't understand. How can I help with that? Why wouldn't I want to?
She didn't like the way this was going. The ones who clung to the claim of ignorance and innocence often took longer to break than the ones who owned their guilt, but were determined not to sell out their government, or their jihad, or their comrades. She walked to the desk and picked up the first picture. It was one of the very clear surveillance shots of De La Fuentes, a close-up. "Let's start with this man," she said, holding the photo at his eye level and using one of the work lights as a spot. Perfectly blank, absolutely no reaction. A bad sign.
"Who is that?"
She allowed her sigh to be audible this time. "You're making the wrong choice, Daniel. Please think about what you're doing."
"But I don't know who that is."
She fixed him with a resigned stare.
"I'm being completely honest, Alex. I don't know that man."
She sighed again. "Then I suppose we'll get started." The disbelief was there again. She'd never dealt with that in an interrogation before. All the others who'd been on her table had known what they were there for. She'd faced terror and pleading and occasionally stoic defiance, but never this strange, trusting, almost challenge. "You won't hurt me."
Is this some kind of fetish fantasy thing?"
he asked in a low voice, somehow finding a way to sound embarrassed, despite the bizarreness of his circumstances.
"I don't really know the rules for that stuff."
She turned away to hide an inappropriate smile. "Get a grip," she ordered herself, trying to keep the movement smooth, as if she'd meant to walk away at that exact moment. She went to her desk. She clicked one key on her computer, keeping it awake. Then she picked up the prop tray. It was heavy, and some of the props clanked against each other as she moved it. She brought the tray to his side, rested the edge of it beside the syringes, and angled the light so the metallic implements shone brightly. "I'm sorry you find this confusing," she said in an even voice. "I am in deadly earnest, I assure you. I want you to look at my tools." He did, and his eyes grew very wide. She watched for some hint of the other side to break through, the dark Daniel, but there was nothing. His eyes were somehow still gentle, even in abject fear. Innocent. Lines spoken by Hitchcock's Norman Bates flashed through her head. "I think I must have one of those faces you can't help believing." She shuddered, but he didn't notice, his eyes fixed on her props. "I don't have to use these very often," she told him, touching the pliers lightly, then stroking her finger along the extra-large scalpel. "They call me in when they would like to have the subject left more or less intact." She brushed the bolt cutters on the hard syllable of the last word. "But I don't really need these tools anyway." She flicked her fingernail against the canister of the welding torch, producing a high-pitched pinging sound. "Can you guess why?" He didn't respond, frozen in horror. He was starting to see now. Yes, this was real. Only Dark Daniel must already have known that. So why wasn't he surfacing? Did he think she could be fooled? Or that his charm on the train had melted her weak, womanly heart? "I'll tell you why," she said in a voice so low it was almost a whisper. She leaned in conspiratorially and held her face in a sweet, regretful half-smile that didn't touch her eyes. "Because what I do hurts so much worse." His eyes looked like they were going to bug out of his head.
This, at least, was a familiar reaction. She took the tray away, letting his focus move naturally to the long line of syringes left behind, glinting in the light. "The first time will last only 10 minutes, she told him, still facing away as she set the tools back on the desk. She spun around. "But it will feel like a lot longer. This will just be a taste. You could look at it as a warning shot. When it's done, we'll try talking again." She picked up the syringe on the far end of the tray, pushed the plunger till a drop of liquid dewed at the top, then flicked it away theatrically, like a nurse in a movie.
"Please," he whispered. "Please, I don't know what this is about. I can't help you. I swear I would if I could."
"You will," she promised, and she stabbed the needle into his left triceps brachii. The reaction was nearly instantaneous. His left arm spasmed and jerked against the restraint. While he stared in horror at his convulsing muscles, she quietly picked up another syringe and crossed to his right side. He saw her approach.
"Alex, please!" he yelled.
She ignored him and his attempts to somehow evade her, as if he were strong enough to rip free of his cuffs, and injected this dose of lactic acid into his right quad. His knee wrenched flat, the muscles pulling his foot off the table. He gasped and then groaned. She moved deliberately, not in any hurry, but not slowly either. Another syringe. His left arm was already too incapacitated for him to try to resist her. This time, she injected the acid into his left biceps brachii. Immediately, the opposing triceps muscle group began tearing against the biceps, battling for contraction dominance. The air burst out of his mouth like he'd just been punched in the gut, but she knew the pain was much, much worse than any blow. One more injection, this time into his right biceps femoris. The same ripping struggle that was happening in his arm started in his leg, and the screaming started with it. She went to stand by his head, watching dispassionately while the tendons in his neck strained into white ropes. When he opened his mouth to scream again, she shoved a gag in. If he bit off his tongue, he wouldn't be able to tell her anything. She walked slowly to her desk chair while his muffled shrieks were absorbed into the double layer of foam, sat down, and crossed her legs. She looked at the monitors, everything elevated but nothing in the danger zone. A healthy body could experience a lot more pain than most people would think before its important organs were really in any serious peril. She brushed the touchpad on her computer, keeping the screen brightly lit. Then she pulled her wristwatch out of her pocket and laid it across her knee. This was mostly for theatrics. She could have watched the clock on her computer or the monitors just as easily. She faced him while she waited, her face composed and the silver watch bright against her black clothing. Subjects tended to find this disconcerting, that she could watch her handiwork so dispassionately. So she stared at him, expression polite, an audience member at a mediocre play, while his body thrashed and distorted on the table and his screams choked past the gag. Sometimes his eyes were on her, pleading and agonized, and other times they whirled crazily around the room. 10 minutes could be a very long time. His muscles started to spasm independently of each other, some locking into knots and others seeming to want to jerk themselves off the bone. Sweat ran off his face, darkening his hair. The skin over his cheekbones looked ready to split. The screams lowered in pitch, turned hoarse, sounding much more like an animal's than a man's. 6 more minutes. And these weren't even the good drugs. Anyone who was sick enough to want to could duplicate the pain she was inflicting now. The acid she was using wasn't a controlled substance. It was fairly easy to acquire online, even if one happened to be on the run from the dark underbelly of the U.S. government. Now, back in her interrogating prime, when she had her beautiful lab and her beautiful budget, her sequencer and her reactor, she'd been able to create some truly unique and ultra-specific preparations. The chemist really wasn't the proper code name for her at all. However, The molecular biologist was probably too big a mouthful. Barnaby had been the chemistry expert, and the things he'd taught her had kept her alive after she'd lost her lab. She had become her codename in the end. But in the beginning, it had been her theoretical research with monoclonal antibodies that had brought her to the department's attention. It was a shame she couldn't risk taking Daniel to the lab. This operation would have produced results much more quickly. And she'd been so close to actually removing pain from the equation. That had been her holy grail, though no one else seemed eager for it. She was sure that if she'd been working in the lab for the past 3 years instead of running for her life, by now, she would have created the key that would unlock whatever one needed from the human mind. No torture, no horror. Just quick answers given pleasantly, and then an equally pleasant trip to either a cell or the execution wall. They should have let her work. Still 4 minutes to go. She and Barnaby had discussed different strategies for dealing with these periods of the interrogation. Barnaby had told himself stories. He would remember the fairy tales from his childhood and think of modern versions or alternative endings or what would happen if the characters switched places. He'd said some of the ideas he came up with were pretty good, and when he had time, he was going to write them down. She, however, felt like she was wasting time if she wasn't doing something practical. She would plan things. In the beginning, she planned new versions of the monoclonal antibody that would control brain response and block neural receptors. Later, she planned her life on the run, thinking of everything that could possibly go wrong, every worst-case scenario, and what she could do to keep herself from falling into each trap. Then, how to escape the trap halfway in. Then, after it was sprung. She tried to envision every possibility. Barnaby said she needed to take a mental break now and then, have some fun, or what was the point of living? Just living, she had decided. Just living was all she asked. And so she put in the mental effort needed to make that possible. Today, she thought about the next step. Tonight, tomorrow night, or heaven help him, the night after that, Daniel was going to tell her everything. Everyone broke. It was just a simple fact that a human being could resist pain for only so long. Some people could deal better with one kind or another, but that meant she would just switch to another type of pain. At some point, if he didn't talk, she would roll Daniel onto his stomach so he wouldn't choke on his own vomit and administer what she called the green needle, though the serum was actually clear, just like all the others. If that didn't work, she'd try one of the hallucinogens. There was always a new way to feel pain. The body had so many different ways to experience stimuli. Once she had what she needed, she would stop his pain, put him under, and then email Karsten from this IP address and tell him everything she'd learned. Then she would drive away and keep going for a very long time. Maybe Karsten and company wouldn't come after her. Maybe they would. And she might never know, because she would most likely keep hiding until she died. Hopefully, of natural causes. Before 9 minutes were over, the dose started to wear off. It was different for everyone, and Daniel was on the larger side. His screams turned to groans as his body slowly melted into a pile of exhausted flesh on the table. And then he was quiet. She removed the gag, and he gasped for air. He stared at her with awed horror for one long moment, and then he started to cry. "I'll give you a few minutes," she said. "Collect your thoughts." She left through the exit he couldn't see, then sat quietly on the cot and listened to him choke back his sobs. Crying was normal, and usually it boded well, but it was obvious that this crying was Daniel the teacher. There was still no sign of dark Daniel. Not one knowing glance or defensive tick. What would reach him? If this was truly dissociative identity disorder, could she force an appearance of the personality she wanted? She needed an actual shrink on her team today. If she'd gone docilely into the lab, as they'd wanted,
they probably would have been able to find her one almost the moment she asked. Well, there was nothing she could do about it now. She quietly ate a soft breakfast bar while she waited for his breathing to even out, and then she ate a second. She washed it down with a box of apple juice out of the mini-fridge. When she re-entered the tent, Daniel was gazing despairingly at the egg foam ceiling. She walked quietly to the computer and touched a key. "I'm sorry you had to go through that, Daniel." He hadn't heard her enter. He cringed as far away from the sound of her voice as he could. "Let's not do it again, okay?" she said. She settled back into her chair. "I want to go home too." Kind of a lie, but also mostly true, if impossible. "And though you might not believe me, I'm not actually a sadist. I don't enjoy watching you suffer. I just don't have another choice. I'm not going to let all those people die." His voice was raw.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"You'd be surprised how many people say that, and keep saying it for round after round of what you just went through. And worse. And then on the 10th round for one, on the 17th for another, suddenly the truth comes pouring out. And I get to tell the good guys where to find the warhead or the chemical bomb or the disease agent. And people stay alive, Daniel."
"I haven't killed anyone," he rasped.
"But you're planning to. And I'm going to change your mind."
"I would never do that."
She sighed. "This is going to take a long time, isn't it?"
"I can't tell you anything I don't know. You've got the wrong person."
"I've heard that one a lot, too," she said lightly, but it touched a nerve. If she couldn't get the other Daniel to appear, then wasn't she truly torturing the wrong person? She made a snap decision to go off script again, though she was out of her depth when it came to mental illness. "Daniel, do you ever have blackouts?" A long pause.
"What?"
"Have you, for example, woken up somewhere and not known how you got there? Has anyone ever told you that you did or said something that you can't remember doing or saying?"
No. Well, today, I mean, that's what you're saying, right? That I'm planning to do something awful, but I don't know what it is?"
"Have you ever been diagnosed with dissociative identity disorder?"
"No. Alex, I'm not the crazy person in this room."
That didn't help at all. "Tell me about Egypt." He turned his head toward her. His expression made the words he was thinking as clear as if he'd spoken them out loud.
"Are you kidding me, lady?"
She just waited. He sighed a pained little gasp.
"Well, Egypt has one of the longest histories of any modern civilization. There is evidence that Egyptians were living along the Nile as early as the 10th millennium BC. By about 6,000 BC.
"That's hilarious, Daniel. Can we be serious now?"
"I don't know what you want. Are you testing to see if I'm really a history teacher? I can't even tell."
She could hear the strength coming back into his voice. The nice thing about her drugs was that they wore off quickly. She could have a focused conversation between rounds, and she'd found that the subjects had a greater fear of pain when they weren't feeling any. The high ups and deep downs seemed to speed things along. She touched a key on her computer. "Tell me about your trip to Egypt."
"I've never been to Egypt."
"You didn't go there with Habitat for Humanity 2 years ago?"
"No. I've been in Mexico for the past 3 summers.
"You do know people keep track of these things, right? That your passport number is logged into a computer and there's a record of where you've gone?"
"Which is why you should know I was in Mexico."
"Where you met Enrique de la Fuentes."
"Who?"
She blinked her eyes slowly, her face very bored.
"Hold on," he said,
staring up like an explanation might be posted on the ceiling.
"I know that name. It was on the news a while ago. With those DEA officers that went missing. He's a drug dealer, right?"
She held up the picture of De La Fuentes again.
"That's him?"
She nodded.
"Why do you think I know him?"
She answered slowly. "Because I also have pictures of you together. And because he's given you $10 million in the past 3 years. His mouth dropped open,
and the word came out as a gasp. What? $10 million in your name, scattered around the Cayman Islands and Swiss banks. He stared at her for another second, and then anger suddenly twisted his face, and his voice turned harsh.
If I've got $10 million, then why do I live in a roach-infested walk-up studio in Columbia Heights? Why are we using the same patched volleyball uniforms that the schools had since 1973? Why do I ride the metro while my ex-wife's new husband drives around town in a Mercedes? And why am I getting rickets from eating a steady diet of ramen?
She let him vent. The desire to talk was a small step in the right direction. Unfortunately, this angry Daniel was still the schoolteacher version, just not a very happy schoolteacher.
Wait a minute, what do you mean you have pictures of me with the drug guy?
She walked to her desk and pulled the appropriate photo. In Elminia, Egypt, with De La Fuentes, she announced as she held the photo in front of his face. Finally, a reaction. His head jerked back, his eyes narrowed, then opened wide. She could almost watch his thoughts move as they ran through his brain and settled in his face. He was analyzing what he was looking at and making a plan. Still, no sign of the other Daniel, but at least he seemed to recognize that other part of himself. Do you want to tell me about Egypt now, Daniel? Tight lips.
I've never been there. That's not me.
I don't believe you, she sighed, which is really too bad because we've got to move this party along. The fear came back, fast and hard.
Alex, please, I swear that isn't me. Please don't.
This is my job, Daniel. I have to find out how to save those people. All the reticence disappeared.
I don't want to hurt anyone. I want you to save them too.
It was harder not to believe his sincerity now. That picture meant something to you. He shook his head once, expression closing up.
It wasn't me.
She had to admit she was more than a little fascinated. This was really something new. How she wished she had Barnaby to consult. Oh well, she was on the clock. She didn't have time for wishing. She stacked the syringes one by one onto her left palm. 8 this time. He stared at her with terror and sadness. He started to say something, but no sound came out. She paused with the first needle ready in her right hand. Daniel, if you want to say something, do it quick. Dejected.
It won't help.
She waited another second, and he looked straight at her.
It's just your face, he said. It's the same as before. Exactly the same.
She flinched, then pivoted, and moved up the table to stand beside his head. He tried to strain away from her, but that just better exposed his sternocleidomastoid. Usually she'd save this particular muscle for later in the interrogation. It was one of the very most painful things she could do to a subject under her current limitations. But she wanted to leave quickly, so she stabbed the needle into the side of his neck and pushed the plunger down. Without really looking at him, she replaced the gag as soon as his mouth opened. Then, dropping the other syringes, she escaped the room. Chapter 7. She was rusty, that was all. It had been 3 years. That's why she was feeling things. That's why this subject was affecting her. It was nothing except her having been out of the game so long. She could still get her groove back. She entered the room once during this session to keep the computer alive, but didn't stay to watch. She came back only after the dose was waning, about 15 minutes later. He lay there, gasping again, but this time he didn't cry, though she knew the pain had been much worse than before. Blood from his chafed skin now stained all the restraints and dripped onto the table. She might need to paralyze him for the next round so his injuries didn't get any worse. That was a frightening feeling, too. It might help. He started to shiver. She actually turned toward the exit 1 millisecond before she realized that she was heading out to get him a blanket.
What was wrong with her? Focus.
Do you have anything to say? She asked gently when his breathing was more even. His answer came out in exhausted, breathy gasps.
It's not me. Swear, I'm not planning anything. Don't know the drug guy. Wish I could help. Really, really, really wish I could help. Really.
You're showing some resistance to this method. So maybe we'll try something new.
Resistance?
He croaked in disbelief.
You think I'm resisting?
Honestly, I'm a little worried about messing up your head with hallucinogens. Seems like there's already enough trouble up there. She tapped her fingers against his sweaty scalp as she spoke. Maybe we have no choice but to try old school. She continued to absently tap his head as she glanced at the tray of tools on her desk. Are you squeamish?
Why is this happening to me?
Totally rhetorical. He wasn't looking for an answer to his broken whisper. She gave him one anyway. Because this is exactly what happens when you plan to release a lethal influenza virus in 4 American states, potentially killing 1 million American citizens. The American government takes exception to that kind of behavior, and they send me to make you talk. His eyes focused on her, horror suddenly overtaken by shock.
What the actual hell?
Yes, it's horrific and appalling and evil. I know.
Alex, really, this is nuts. I think you have a problem.
She got in his face. My problem is that you aren't telling me where the virus is. Do you have it already? Is it with De La Fuente still? When's the drop? Where is it?
This is insane. You're insane.
I'd probably enjoy life a lot more if that were true. But I'm beginning to think they sent the wrong doctor. We need the doctor for crazies here. I don't know how to get other Daniel to show up.
Other Daniel?
The one I can see in these pictures. She whirled and grabbed a handful from the desk, jabbing the computer once, angrily in passing.
Look,
she said, shoving them toward his face, peeling off one after the other and dropping them to the floor. It's your body. She smacked one photo against his shoulder before letting it fall. Your face, see? But not the right expression. There's someone else looking out of your eyes, Daniel, and I'm not sure if you're aware of him or not. But there it was again, the recognition. He was aware of something. Look, for right now, I'd settle for you just telling me what you see in this picture. She held up the top photo. Other Daniel skulking in the back door of a Mexican bar. He looked at her, torn.
I can't explain it. It doesn't make any sense.
You see something I don't. What is it? Daniel tried to shake his head, but it barely moved. His muscles were so fatigued.
He looks like...
Like you.
No,
he whispered.
I mean, yes, of course he looks like me, but I can see the differences.
The way he said it, of course he looks like me. The transparent honesty again. But something still withheld. Daniel, do you know who this is? A real question this time. Not snark, not rhetoric. She wasn't playing psychiatrist, badly, now. She felt for the first time since the interrogation started that she was actually onto something.
It can't be,
he breathed, closing his eyes less out of exhaustion and more to block out the picture, she thought.
It's impossible.
She leaned forward. Tell me, she murmured. He opened his eyes and stared at her searchingly.
You're sure? He's going to kill people?
So natural, his use of the third person.
Hundreds of thousands of people, Daniel, she promised, earnest as he was. She used the third person, too. He's got access to a deadly virus, and he's going to spread it for a psychopathic drug lord. He already has hotel reservations in your name. He's doing this in 3 weeks. A whisper.
I don't believe it.
I don't want to either. This virus? It's a bad one, Daniel. It's going to kill a lot more people than a bomb. There'll be no way to control how it spreads.
But how could he do this? Why?
At this point, she was nearly 65% convinced that they were not talking about one of Daniel's multiple personalities. It's too late for that. All that matters now is stopping him. Who is he, Daniel? Help me save those innocent people. A different kind of agony twisted his features. She'd seen this before. With another subject, she would know that his desire to be loyal was warring with his desire to avoid more torture. With Daniel, she rather thought the war was between loyalty and wanting to do the right thing. In the perfect stillness of the night, as she waited for his answer, through the weak sound barrier of the foam, she clearly heard a small prop plane overhead. Very close, overhead. Daniel looked up. Time slowed down while she analyzed. Daniel didn't look surprised or relieved. The noise did not seem to signal rescue or attack to him. He just noticed it the way someone might notice a car alarm going off. Not relevant to himself, but distracting from the moment. It felt like she was moving in slow motion as she jumped up and raced to the desk for the syringe she needed.
You don't have to do that, Alex, Daniel said, resigned. I'll tell you.
Shh, she whispered, leaning over his head while she injected the drug, into the IV port this time. I'm just putting you to sleep for now. She patted his cheek. No pain, I promise. Understanding lit his eyes as he connected the sound to her behavior.
Are we in danger?
He whispered back. We. Huh. Another interesting pronoun choice. She'd never had a subject anything like this before.
I don't know if you are, she said, as his eyes drooped closed, but I sure as hell am.
There was a heavy concussion, not immediately outside the barn, but too close for her liking. She put the gas mask securely on his face, then donned hers and screwed in the canister. This time was no drill. She glanced at her computer. She had about 10 minutes left there. She wasn't sure it was enough, so she tapped the spacebar. Then she jabbed a button on the little black box, and the light on the side started blinking rapidly. Almost as a reflex, she covered Daniel with the blanket again. She shut the lights off, so the room was lit only by the white gleam of her computer screen, and exited the tent. Inside the barn, everything was black. She searched, hands out in front of her, until she found the bag beside her cot and, with years of practice guiding her, blindly put on all of her easily accessible armor. She shoved the gun into the front of her belt. She took a syringe from her bag, jabbed it into her thigh, and depressed the plunger. Ready as she could make herself, she crept into the back corner of the tent and hid where she knew the darkest shadow would be if someone came in with a flashlight. She pulled out the gun, removed the safety, and gripped it with both hands. Then she put her ear to the seam of the tent and listened, waiting for someone to open the door or a window into the barn and die. While she waited, through the slow seconds, her mind raced through more analysis. This wasn't a big operation coming for her. No way any extraction team or elimination team worth its salt would announce its arrival with a noisy plane. There were better ways, quieter ways. And if it was a big SWAT-style team sent after her without any briefing, just busting their way in by sheer might, they would have come in a copter. The plane had sounded very small, a 3-seater at most, but probably 2. If a lone assassin was coming for her again, as had always been the case in the past, she didn't know what this guy thought he was doing. Why would he give himself away?
The noisy plane was the move of someone who was lacking resources and in a very big hurry. Someone to whom time was much more important than stealth. Who was it? Not De La Fuentes. First of all, a small prop plane didn't seem like a drug lord's M.O. She imagined that with De La Fuentes, there would be a fleet of black SUVs and a bunch of thugs with machine guns. Second, she had a gut feeling about this one. No, she wasn't a lie detector. Good liars, professional liars, could fool anyone, human or machine. Her job had never been about guessing the truth from the subject's shifty eyes or tangled contradictions. Her job was breaking down the subject until there was nothing left but compliant flesh and one story. She wasn't the best because she could separate the truth from the lie. She was the best because she had a natural affinity for the capabilities of the human body and was a genius with a beaker. She knew exactly what a body could handle and exactly how to push it to that point. So gut feelings were not her forte, and she couldn't remember the last time she'd really felt something like this. She believed Daniel was telling the truth. That's why this exercise with Daniel had bothered her so much, because he wasn't lying. It wasn't going to be De La Fuentes coming after him. No one was coming after Daniel because he wasn't anything more than what he said he was. An English teacher, a history teacher, a volleyball coach. Whoever was coming for her. Why now? Had the department been tracking her all day and only just discovered her? Were they trying to save Daniel's life, having realized too late that he wasn't the guy? No way. They would have known that before they set her up. They had access to too much information to be fooled in this. The file wasn't entirely make-believe, but it was manipulated. They had wanted her to get the wrong person. For a moment, she felt a wave of nausea. She'd tortured an innocent man. She put that away quickly. Time for regret later, if she didn't die now. The columns reversed again. Elaborate trap, not real crisis. Though she did believe the situation with De La Fuentes was genuine, she no longer believed it was quite so urgent as she'd been told. Time was the easiest small change to make to a file. The tight deadline was a distortion. Low stakes again. Just her own life to save. And maybe Daniel's, if she could. Maybe someone else, that brilliant and unsuspecting kid who had taken her place at the department, was working on the real terrorist now. Maybe they didn't think she still had the ability to get what they wanted. But why bring her in at all, then? Maybe the terrorist was dead, and they wanted a fall guy. Maybe they'd discovered this doppelganger weeks ago and held him in reserve. Get the chemist to make somebody confess to something and tie a bow on a bad situation? That wouldn't explain the visitor, though. It had to be near 5 in the morning. Maybe it was just a farmer who liked to start the day early and knew the area so well that he didn't mind flying without radar through a bunch of tall trees in the pitch-black night, and then enjoyed a good crash landing for the adrenaline kick. She could hear Daniel's breath rasp through the gas mask's filter. She wondered if she had done the right thing putting him under. He was just so exposed, helpless. The department had already exhibited exactly how much concern they had for Daniel Beach's well-being. And she'd left him trussed and defenseless in the middle of the room, a fish in a barrel, a sitting duck. She owed him better than that. But her first reaction had been to neutralize him. It wouldn't have been safe to free him, she knew. Of course, he would have attacked her, tried to exact revenge. If it came to brute strength, he'd have the advantage. And she didn't want to have to poison him or shoot him. At least this way, his death wouldn't be on her hands. She still felt guilty. His vulnerable presence in the darkness, worrying at the edges of her mind like sandpaper against cotton, pulling threads of concentration away from her. Too late for second thoughts. She heard the faint sound of movement outside. The barn was surrounded by bushes with stiff, rustling leaves. Someone was in them now, looking into the windows. What if he just let loose with an Uzi through the side of the barn? He obviously wasn't worried about noise. Should she lower the table, get Daniel down in case the tent was sprayed with bullets? She had oiled the accordion bass well, but she wasn't positive it wouldn't squeak. She scuttled over to the table and cranked it lower as fast as she could. It did make some low bass groans, but she didn't think they would carry outside the barn, especially through the foam barrier. She scooted back to her corner and listened again. More rustling. He was at another window, on the other side of the barn. Her booby-trapped wires were inconspicuous, but not invisible. Hopefully he was only looking for a target inside. Had he gone to the house first? Why hadn't he gone in? Sounds outside another window. Just open it, she thought to herself. Just crawl inside. A sound she didn't understand. A hissing, followed by a heavy clank from above. Then, a thump, thump, thump. So loud that the barn seemed to shake. Her first thought was small explosives, and she hunkered down into a protective position automatically. But in the next second, she realized it wasn't that loud. It was just the contrast with the silence before. There was no sound of anything breaking, no glass shattering or metal tearing. Was the reverberation enough to break the connections around the windows or door? She didn't think so. Then she realized the thumps against the wall were moving up, just as they stopped. Above her. Major hitch. He was coming through the roof. She was on her feet in a second, one eye to the seam in the tent. It was still too dark to see anything. Above her, the sound of a welding torch. Her intruder had one too. All her preparation was falling apart. She glanced back once at Daniel. His gas mask was on. He would be fine. Then she darted out into the larger space of the barn, bent low with her hands stretched out in front of her to find the objects in her way, and moved as quickly as she could toward the faint moonlight filtering through the closest window. There were milking stalls to maneuver around, but she thought she remembered the clearest route. She broke into the open space between the tent and the stalls, half running, and one hand found the milking apparatus. She dodged that and reached out for the window. Something tremendously hard and heavy threw her to the ground face first, knocking the wind out of her and pinning her to the floor. The gun flew away into the darkness. Her head thudded resoundingly against the concrete. Bright pops of light skittered across her eyes. Someone grabbed her wrists and pulled her arms behind her, then wrenched them higher until she guessed her shoulders were close to dislocating. A grunt escaped her lungs as the new position forced the air out. Her thumbs quickly twisted the rings on her left and right fourth fingers, exposing the barbs.
"What's this?"
a man's voice said directly above her, generic American accent. He changed his grip so he was holding both her wrists in one hand. With the other, he yanked off her gas mask.
"So maybe not a suicide bomber after all," he mused. "Let me guess. Those hot wires aren't connected to charges, are they?"
She squirmed under him, twisting her wrists, trying to get her rings in contact with his skin.
"Stop that," he ordered.
He clocked the back of her head with something hard, probably the gas mask, and her face smacked the floor. She felt her lips split and tasted blood. She braced for it. In such close quarters, it would probably be a blade across her carotid artery, or a wire around her throat. She hoped for the blade. She wouldn't feel the slice as pain, not with the specially designed dextroamphetamine she had racing through her veins right now. But she'd probably feel the strangulation.
"Get up."
The weight lifted off her back, and she was drawn up by her wrists. She got her feet under her as quickly as possible to take the pressure off her shoulder joints. She needed to keep her arms usable. He stood behind her, but she could tell by where his breathing came from that he was tall. He pulled her wrists until she was on her tiptoes, struggling to maintain contact with the floor.
"Okay, shorty. Now you're gonna do something for me."
She didn't have the training to beat him in a fight, and she didn't have the strength to wrest herself free. She could only try to make use of the options she'd prepared. She let her weight sag precariously against her stressed shoulders for 1 second as she kicked the toe of her left shoe down with enough pressure to pop the stiletto blade out of the heel. The front-facing blade was in her right shoe. Then she slashed awkwardly back toward where his legs had to be. He jumped out of the way, loosening his grip enough for her to rip free and spin around, her right hand flying out for an open-handed slap. He was too tall. She missed his face, and her barb scraped against something hard on his chest. Body armor. She danced backward, away from the blow she could hear coming but could not see, her hands extended, trying to make contact with unprotected skin. Something cut her legs out from under her. She hit the ground and rolled away, but he was on top of her at once. He grabbed her hair and bounced her face against the concrete again. Her nose popped, and blood flooded her lips and chin. He bent down to speak directly in her ear.
Playtime is over, honey.
She tried to headbutt him. The back of her head connected with something, but not a face. Uneven spires. Metallic. Night vision goggles. No wonder he'd been able to control the fight so well. He slapped the back of her head. If only she'd put her earrings on.
Seriously, stop it. Look, I'm going to get off you. I can see you and you can't see me. I've got a gun and I will shoot you in the kneecap if you try one more stupid trick. Okay?
While he was talking, he reached back with one hand and ripped her shoes off, one after the other. He didn't check her pockets, so she still had the scalpel blades and the needles in her belt. He jumped off her. She heard him move away and click the safety off his gun. "What do you want me to do?" she asked in her best frightened little girl voice. The split lip helped. She imagined her face was a sight. It was going to hurt like hell when the drugs wore off.
"Disarm your booby traps and open the door."
"I'll need..." sniff, sniff. "The light on."
"No problem. I'm switching my night vision goggles for your gas mask anyway."
She dropped her head, hoping to hide her expression. Once he had the mask on, 90% of her defenses were rendered obsolete. She limped, too theatrical, to the panel by the door and turned the light on. She couldn't think of any other option right now. He hadn't killed her immediately. That meant he wasn't under direct orders from the department. He must have an agenda here. She had to figure out what it was he wanted and then keep it from him long enough to gain the advantage. The bad news was that if he needed the door open, it was probably not just to have an easy escape route. It meant he had backup, which didn't help her odds. Or Daniel's, a voice in her head added. Like she needed more pressure. But Daniel was here because of her. She felt responsible for him. She owed him. When she turned, blinking against the brilliance of the overhead lights, the man was 20 feet from where she stood. He had to be 6'3" or 6'4", and the skin on his neck and jaw was definitely white, but that was all she could be sure about. His body was covered with a black one-piece suit, almost like a wetsuit, but rough, with jutting plates of Kevlar. Torso, arms, and legs all armored. He looked pretty muscular, but some of that could be the Kevlar. He wore heavy all-terrain boots, also black, and a black watch cap on his head. His face was hidden by her gas mask. Over one shoulder was slung an assault rifle, a Macmillan 50 caliber sniper. She'd done her homework. It wasn't hard to become an expert on just about anything when you spent all your free time studying. Knowing gun makes and models could tell her a lot about an assailant or any suspicious man on the street who might be planning to become an assailant. This assailant had more than one gun. A high-standard HDS was holstered on his hip, and a Sig Sauer P220 was in his right hand, pointed at her knee. Right-handed, she noted. She had no doubt he could hit her kneecap from this distance. Given that particular rifle, she figured he could probably hit her wherever he wanted, from however far away he wanted to. He reminded her of Batman, but without the cape. Also, she thought she remembered something about Batman not ever using guns. Though if he did, assuming taste and skill, he would probably choose these. If she couldn't get this assassin out of the gas mask, it wouldn't matter how many super soldier friends were waiting for him outside. He would have no trouble killing her once he had what he wanted.
Disarm your leads.
She feigned a brief dizzy spell as she limped over to the barn door, trying to get as much time for thinking as possible. Who would want her alive? Was he a kind of bounty hunter? Did he think he could sell her back to the department? If they'd put out a contract on her, she was sure that all they would have asked for was her head. So, a blackmailer slash bounty hunter? I have what you want, but I'll release it alive back into the wild unless you double the reward. Smart. The department would definitely pay. That was the best guess she could come up with by the time she was to the back edge of the door. The system wasn't complicated. There were three sets of leads for each area of ingress. The first was outside in the bushes to the left of the barn door, hidden under a thin layer of dirt. Then, there was the trigger line that ran across the seam where the door opened, connected loosely enough to pull apart with the slightest breach. The third was the safety, tucked under the wood paneling beside the door. Its exposed wires were separated by an inch of space. The current was only stable if at least two of the connections were linked. She wondered if she should make the process look more convoluted than it actually was, but then decided there was no point. All he'd have to do was examine the setup for a few seconds to understand it. She wrapped the ends of the third lead tightly together and then stood back. It's off. She made her voice crack in the middle of the words. Hopefully he would buy that he'd knocked the fight out of her.
If you would do the honors, he suggested.
She gimped her way to the other side of the door and then pulled it back, her eyes already on the spot in the darkness where she assumed the dark heads of his companions would be. There was nothing but the farmhouse in the distance, and then her eyes dropped, and she froze.
What is that? She whispered.
It wasn't actually a question for him, it was just shock breaking through her facade.
That,
he answered in a tone that could only be described as obnoxiously smug,
is 120 pounds of muscles, claws, and teeth.
He must have made some kind of signal. She didn't see it. Her eyes were locked on his backup, because the animal darted forward to his side. It looked like a German shepherd, a very big one, but it didn't have the coloring she associated with Alsatians. This one was pure black. Could it be a wolf?
Einstein, he said to the animal.
It looked up, alert. He pointed to her, and his next word was obviously a command.
Control.
The dog, Wolf, rushed her with its hackles rising. She backed up until the barn door was against her spine, her hands in the air. The dog braced itself, snout just inches from her stomach, its muzzle pulled back to expose long, sharp, white fangs. A low, rumbling growl began deep in its throat. Intimidate would have been a better name for the command. She thought about trying to get one of her barbs into the dog's skin, but doubted they were long enough to make it past its thick fur. And it wasn't like the thing was going to sit there and let her pet it. The Batman wannabe relaxed a bit, or she thought he did. It was hard to be positive about what his muscles were doing under the armor.
All right, now that we've broken the ice, let's talk.
She waited.
Where is Daniel Beach?
She could feel the shock on her face, even as she tried to suppress it. All her theories whirled around again and turned upside down.
Answer me!
She didn't know what to say. Did the department want Daniel dead first? Make sure the loose ends were all tied up neatly? She thought of Daniel, exposed and unconscious in the center of the tent, not exactly a strong hiding place, and felt sick. Batman stalked angrily toward her. The dog reacted, moving to the side to allow the man through, even as its snarl grew in volume. The man shoved the barrel of his Sig Sauer under her jaw, roughly, knocking her head against the barn door.
If he's dead, the man hissed, you're going to wish you were too. I'll make you beg me to kill you.
She almost snorted. This thug would probably hit her a few times. Maybe, if he had any creativity, he would cut her up a bit, and then he'd shoot her. He had no idea how to generate and maintain real pain. But his threats did tell her something. He apparently wanted Daniel alive. So they had that one thing in common. Resistance was counterproductive at this point anyway. She needed him to think she was out of the game. She needed him to relax his guard. And she needed to get back to her computer. Daniel's in the tent. She pointed with her chin, keeping her hands raised. He's fine. Batman seemed to consider this for a moment.
Okay, ladies first. Einstein, he barked. Heard.
He pointed to the tent. The dog barked in response and moved around to her side. It poked her thigh with its nose, then nipped her.
Ow!
She complained, jumping away. The dog got behind her and poked her again.
Just walk slow and steady to your tent thing, and he won't hurt you.
She really didn't like the dog behind her, but she kept her pace to the injured hobble she'd been faking. She glanced back at the animal to see what it was doing.
Don't worry, Batman said, amused. People don't taste very good. He doesn't want to eat you. He'll only do that if I tell him to.
She ignored the taunt and moved slowly to the curtain access point.
Hold that open so I can see in, he instructed.
The tarp was stiff with the layers of egg foam. She rolled it back as far as she could. It was mostly black inside. Her computer screen glowed white in the darkness, the monitors dull green. Because she knew the shapes, she could make out Daniel under the blanket, just a foot off the ground, his chest rising and falling evenly. There was a long moment of silence.
Do you want me to turn on the lights? She asked.
Hold it there.
She felt him come up behind her, and then the cold circle of the gun barrel pressing into the nape of her neck, just at her hairline.
What's this?
He murmured. She held perfectly still while his gloved fingers touched the skin next to the gun. At first, she was confused, but then she realized he had noticed the scar there.
Huh, he grunted, and his hand dropped. Okay, where's the switch?
On the desk.
Where is the desk?
About 10 feet in, on the right side, where you can see the computer screen. Would he take off the gas mask and put on the goggles again? The pressure of the gun disappeared. She felt him move back from her, though the dog's nose was still pressed against her butt. A slithering noise hissed across the floor. She looked down and watched the thick black cord for the closest work light whip past her foot. She heard the bang when it fell over, but no crunch of glass. He dragged the light past her, then flipped the switch. For a fraction of a second, she allowed herself to hope that he'd broken the light, but then it flickered to life.
Control,
he commanded the dog. The snarling started again, and she held herself very still. Aiming the light in front of him, he stepped into the tent. She watched the wide beam sweep the walls, then settle on the form in the middle. He moved into the room, sliding into a sinuous gait that was totally silent. Obviously a man of many skills. He walked around the body on the floor, checking the corners and probably looking for weapons, before he focused on Daniel. He crouched, removed the blanket, examined the bloody restraints and the IV, followed the sensors to the monitors, and then watched those for a moment. He put the light down, angling it at the ceiling to get the widest spread of illumination. Finally, he reached down, carefully removed the gas mask from Daniel's face, and set it on the floor.
Danny, she heard him whisper.
Chapter 8. Batman ripped the black glove off his right hand and pressed two fingers to Daniel's carotid. He bent down to listen to Daniel's breathing. She examined her attacker's hand, pale skin, fingers so long they almost looked like they had an extra joint. They looked familiar. Batman shook Daniel's shoulder lightly and asked louder,
Danny?
He's sedated, she volunteered. His face jerked up toward her, and though she couldn't see it, she could feel his glare. Suddenly, he was on his feet, launching himself at her. He grabbed her arms and yanked them over her head again as he shoved his masked face into hers.
What did you do to him?
He shouted. Her concern for Daniel's safety evaporated. Danny was going to be just fine. The one she needed to worry about was herself. "There's nothing wrong with him," she said calmly, dropping the injured damsel routine. "He'll wake up from the sedation in about 2 hours, feeling fine. I can bring him around sooner if you want."
"Not likely," he growled.
They had a staring contest for a few seconds, one she wasn't sure if she'd won or lost. She could see only her own face in the reflective mask.
"Okay," he said. "Let's get you situated."
In a smooth move, he had her hands behind her back, wrists held tight in his gloveless right hand, probably holding the gun in his left. He marched her into the room, toward the folding chair by the desk, and she went along docilely. The dog's hot, heavy breath was close, following right behind. She was almost 70% sure she could twist her hand into a position that would put the left barbed ring against his skin, but she didn't try. It was a risk, but she wanted Batman alive. There was a large hole in her picture of what was going on, and Batman would have at least some of the answers she needed. She carefully nudged the covers over the barbs again. She didn't resist as he sat her, none too gently, in the chair. He pulled her hands in front of her and zip-tied them together.
"I feel like you're the kind of person whose hands I want to keep an eye on," he muttered, as he bent down to secure her ankles to the chair legs.
All the while, the dog's face was directly in front of her own, eyes unblinking. A few drips of warm drool fell onto her sleeve and soaked through. Gross. He zip-tied her elbows to the chair back and stood up, towering over her now, dark and menacing. The long, silenced barrel of his HDS was just a few inches from her forehead. "The switch for the overhead lights is right there." She jerked her chin toward the power strip on the back edge of the desk. Two standard outdoor extension cords were plugged into it. He stared in that direction, and she imagined he was eyeing the switches warily. "Look, anything that can kill you is going to kill me first," she pointed out. He grunted, and then leaned away and punched the power button. The lights flared overhead. Suddenly, the tent looked less threatening. With all the medical equipment, it could have been a medic's tent in a war zone, except for the torture implements on the tray, of course. She saw his face orient toward them now. "Props," she explained. She felt the glare again. He whipped a look back at Daniel, naked and clearly intact on the table. His focus swung back to her.
"What's the flashing light?"
he demanded, gesturing to the little black box with the keypad. "It's telling me the door is unarmed," she lied evenly. In fact, the box wasn't hooked up to anything. It was just a nice red herring to distract from the real trap. He nodded, accepting that, then leaned over to look at her computer. There were no open documents, no files on the desktop. Her background was just a pale geometric design, little white squares on a faintly darker gray field.
"Where are the keys?"
He jerked his head toward Daniel. Taped to the bottom of the desk. He seemed to be eyeing her again through the mask. She willed herself to look calm and compliant. "Take it off. Take it off. Take it off," she prayed silently. He kicked her chair over. She held her neck tight as her left arm and thigh smashed into the ground with bruising force. She was just able to keep her head from hitting the concrete again. She wasn't sure if she was already concussed, and she really needed her brain working right. He grabbed the back of the chair and yanked her upright. In his right hand, he held the keys. "That wasn't necessary," she said.
"Einstein, control."
Growling in her face, more drool on her chest. Batman turned away and quickly unlocked Daniel's shackles.
"What's in the IV?
Saline in the top one, nutrients in the lower.
"Really?"
Sarcastic.
"What happens if I pull the tubing out?
He'll need a drink when he wakes up, but don't use the water bottles on the left side of the mini-fridge outside the tent. Those are poisoned." He turned, pulling the mask off his head so he could glare at her more effectively, yanking the sweaty watch cap off at the same time.
"Yes."
She kept the relief off her face as he dropped the mask on the floor.
You've changed your tactics,
he noted sourly, running his free hand through his short, damp hair.
Or are the ones on the right really the poison bottles?
She looked up at him calmly. I thought you were someone else. And then she really looked at him. She didn't have the resources to keep her face from reacting now. All the theories spun around again, and a bunch of things fell into place. He smirked, realizing what she was seeing. So many clues she'd missed. The pictures that were Daniel, but at the same time, weren't. The holes in the file on Daniel's history, the missing photos, time, dates, birth dates, the easiest small changes to make if you wanted to hide something. Daniel's strange reticence to believe what he was seeing when he looked at the spy images. His struggles with loyalty. Those long, long fingers. Other Daniel, she whispered. The smirk vanished.
Huh?
She blew out a breath and rolled her eyes. She couldn't help it. It was all too much like one of her mom's ridiculous soap operas. She remembered the frustration of every holiday she and her mother had spent together, the afternoons lost to the incredibly slow-moving, implausible dramas. No one was ever really dead. Everyone came back. And then there were the twins. Always with the twins. Batman actually didn't look that much like Daniel, as far as identical twins went. Daniel's features were refined, his aspect gentle. Batman was all hard angles and tightly gripped expressions. His hazel eyes seemed darker, maybe just because his brows were pulled down, putting them in shadow. His hair had the same color and curl but was cropped close, the way she would expect in an agent. Judging from his thicker neck, she would guess Batman had the gym musculature to Daniel's sports build. Not immensely bulky, or he wouldn't have been able to pass for his brother in the pictures, just harder, more defined. Kevin Beach, she said in a flat voice. You're alive. He sat on the edge of her desk. As her eyes followed him, she didn't let them rest for even a second on her computer's clock right by his elbow.
Who were you expecting?
There were a few options, all of whom would want both me and your brother dead. She shook her head. I can't believe I fell for this.
For what?
Daniel's never even met De La Fuentes, has he? It was always you. His face, which had begun to relax, was suddenly guarded again.
What?
She nodded to the photographs scattered on the floor. He seemed to notice them for the first time. He leaned over to examine one, then bent down to grab it. Then the one underneath, and the next. He crumpled them in his fist.
Where did you get these?
Compliments of a small department working for the American government, entirely off the books. I used to be in their employ. They asked me to freelance. His face contorted in outrage.
This is highly classified.
You wouldn't believe my clearance level. Back in her face, he grabbed the front of her t-shirt and lifted her and the chair a few inches off the ground.
Who are you?
She kept herself calm. I'll tell you everything I know. I got played, and I'm about as happy about it as you. He set her down. She wanted to count in her head, mark the time, but she was afraid he would notice her distraction. He stood over her, arms folded.
What's your name?
She spoke as slowly as she thought she could get away with. It used to be Dr. Juliana Fortis, but there's a death certificate with that name now. She watched his face to see if any of this information meant something to him. It didn't, as far as she could tell. I operated under the direction of the department. It doesn't have another name. It doesn't exist, officially. They worked with the CIA and some other black ops programs. Interrogation specialists. He sat back down on the edge of the desk. 3 years ago, someone decided to dissolve the department's two key assets, namely me and my mentor, Dr. Joseph Barnaby. Still no recognition. I don't know why, although we had access to incredibly sensitive information, and I'm guessing something we knew was the motive. They murdered Dr. Barnaby and tried to murder me. I've been running ever since. They found me 4 times. 3 times they tried to have me assassinated. The last time, they apologized. His eyes were narrowed, evaluating. They told me they had a problem and they needed me. They gave me a stack of files on the De La Fuente situation and named your brother as his collaborator. They said that in 3 weeks, Daniel would be spreading the supervirus across the American Southwest. They told me I had 3 days to find out where the virus was and how to stop De La Fuentes from implementing his plan. He was shaking his head now.
They told you that much?
He asked in disbelief. Counterterrorism was always the main component of my job. I know where all the warheads and the dirty bombs are buried. He pursed his lips, making a decision.
Well, since you already know the details, I guess it's not a huge breach of policy for me to tell you that I shut down the De La Fuente situation 6 months ago. De La Fuente's death is not common knowledge. What's left of the cartel is keeping this quiet so they don't appear vulnerable to the competition.
She was surprised at the relief she felt. The weight of knowing that so many people were doomed to painful execution had been heavier than she'd realized. Yes, she breathed. That makes sense. The department wasn't that cold-blooded, apparently. They'd used a nightmare catastrophe to motivate her, but they weren't messing around with civilians still in danger. And the serpent? He looked at her blankly. Sorry, department nickname. The domestic terrorists?
My associates bagged 2 of the 3 ringleaders and took up the entire southern chapter. No survivors.
She smiled tightly.
You're an interrogator,
he said in a suddenly icy voice.
A torturer.
She lifted her chin. Yes.
And you tortured my brother for information he didn't have.
Yes. The very initial phases, at least. He backhanded her. Her head snapped to the side, the chair bobbled, and he shoved it down with 1 foot.
You're going to pay for that, he promised.
She worked her jaw for a second to see if anything was broken. When she was satisfied that nothing was seriously compromised, she responded. I'm not positive, she said, but I think that's why they did this to him, why they fed me this whole elaborate story. Through his teeth.
What reason?
They haven't had the greatest success in killing me. I guess they thought you would get the job done. He clenched his jaw. What I don't understand, though, she continued, is why they didn't just ask you to do it. Or order you, I suppose. Unless you're no longer with the CIA, she guessed. The gun had been the giveaway. From her research, she was pretty certain that the HDS was the gun most commonly carried by CIA agents.
If you didn't know about me, how do you know where I work? He demanded.
About halfway through his question, she saw the bright white rectangle in her peripheral vision go black. Trying to be inconspicuous, she sucked in the deepest breath through her nose she could manage.
Answer me!
He growled, raising his hand again. She just stared at him, not breathing. He hesitated, brow furrowed. Then his eyes went wide. He dove for the mask on the floor. He was out before he hit the ground. Another thump. The dog collapsed into a puddle of fur beside her chair. Under testing circumstances, she'd once held her breath for 1 minute and 42 seconds, but she'd never been able to repeat the feat. Usually, she ran out of air at about 1:15, still way above average. Lung capacity had become a priority in her life. This time, of course, she hadn't been able to hyperventilate beforehand, but she wouldn't need a full minute. She hopped her chair over to Batman's inert form and pushed herself forward, bracing her knees against his back. With her hands secured in front of her, it was easy-ish. Kevin Beach had left Daniel's gas mask on the floor. She hooked it with 1 finger and then tilted the chair back until all 4 legs were on the ground. She leaned her face as close to her hands as she could and slipped the mask over her head, pressing the rubber rim tight to her face to create a seal. She blew out her air in a big whoosh, clearing the chamber, and then took a hesitant breath. If some of the chemical had lingered, she figured she still would be okay. She'd built up a decent resistance and would not have been out as long as the others. but it was especially nice to have such a big head start. She scooted to the desk and rubbed the zip tie around her wrists against the edge of the scalpel on her props tray. It popped quickly against the pressure she was generating. It was easy work to slice the rest of the ties, and then she was free. First things first, she reset the screensaver on her computer to come on after 15 minutes of inactivity. She couldn't lift Batman, sprawled face down on the floor beside his brother, but his arms and legs were close enough to Daniel's that she could use the restraints that had been around Daniel's left wrist and left ankle to secure Kevin's. He'd thrown the key carelessly on the table by Daniel's side. She pocketed it. She didn't re-secure Daniel. Maybe it was a mistake, but she'd already done so much to him it just felt unfair. And underneath it all, she wasn't afraid of him. Another potential mistake. She stripped Batman of his guns and removed the cartridges and firing pins from the rifle and the HDS. She put the safety on the Sig Sauer and tucked it into the back of her belt. She liked it. It looked more serious than her PPK. She went out to the barn stalls to find her PPK and then shoved it in beside the Sig Sauer. She was more familiar with her own. Better to keep it handy, too. She found her shoes, stashed the other guns, and then grabbed the mover straps on her way back into the tent. The dog was too heavy to move easily, so she wrapped the straps around it and hauled it back to the bunk room. At first, she simply closed the door and walked away. Dogs didn't have opposable thumbs. A moment later, though, she changed her mind. The dog's name was Einstein. Who knew what it was capable of? She looked for something to drag in front of the door. Most of the heavy machinery was bolted down. After a few seconds of thought, she walked around to the silver sedan. It just fit between the tent and the stalls. She pulled it right up to the bunkroom door, wedged the front bumper tight against the wood, and then put it in park. She threw the parking brake on for good measure. She closed the barn door and rearmed it. A quick look outside told her that it was almost dawn. Back to the other Daniel. The bat suit was a chore to remove. The fabric between the Kevlar panels was thick and ribbed with fine cables, almost like gristle. She snapped two blades on it before finally quitting at his waist. She settled for peeling back the top half and patting down his legs, which didn't have as much Kevlar to disguise them. She found a knife holstered in the small of his back and one shoved into each boot. She pulled his socks off. He was missing the pinky toe on his left foot, but he had no other weapons that she could find. Not that he'd need any if he got his hands on her again. His whole body was roped with lean, hard bands of muscle. His back was a mess of scars, some from bullets, some blades, and one bad burn, with one more telling scar under the edge of his hairline. He'd removed his tracker, too. Definitely no longer with the CIA. A defector? A double agent? But how had he found his brother? She remembered the droning of the noisy prop plane, the booming thud of the improvised crash landing. Someone in a hurry, she'd thought. Someone for whom time was the biggest problem. She turned to look at Daniel. It seemed another examination was in order. She'd done a more thorough job going over his back, so she looked closely now at his stomach, groin, and thighs. Something she should have done before, but she'd misread the situation badly. It was the idea of time, the hurried way Batman had arrived and attacked, that pointed her toward what she was looking for. An ordinary tracker would indicate only where the subject was, and Daniel wasn't really that far from home, not far enough to cause his dead brother to panic and run in, guns blazing. So this tracker must monitor something more than just location, and it would have to be placed in the right spot. She wanted to kick herself when she saw it, the little red tail of a scar sticking out from the edge of the tape she had used to secure the catheter tube against his leg. She pulled the tape now, always better to do that when the subject was still under anyway, and then removed the catheter. He'd be getting up soon. The scar was tiny, with nothing raised under the skin. She figured the device must be more deeply implanted, next to the femoral artery, no doubt. When his blood pressure had gone crazy with the first round of interrogation, or maybe even from his fear when he'd first woken up, it must have tipped off his brother, and whoever else was monitoring him. The tracker would have to come out. She had enough time before he woke up, so she got her first aid kit. After snapping on some gloves, she numbed the site and sterilized the scalpel. Good thing she hadn't broken all of them on the bat suit. She scrubbed the skin with iodine, then made a quick, neat incision on top of the old one, though a bit longer. She didn't have forceps or tweezers, so she just poked around carefully with one finger on the inside and one on the outside. When she found the device, a little capsule about the size of a throat lozenge, she was able to pressure it out fairly easily. She cleaned up the site and then superglued the edges together. After that, she treated the raw skin on his wrists and ankles, cleaning and bandaging everything. Finally, she put the blanket over him and got him the pillow. The capsule she left to cool on the steel table. To anyone watching the tracker on a monitor, it would appear that Daniel Beach had just died. She had a feeling that his death wouldn't bother anyone in the department. She had a better sense of the other side's plan now, and she was pretty sure it wasn't all about her. She exited the tent to attend to her own face, first wiping off the blood and then trying to determine the extent of the damage. The lip was swollen, and the tear needed a stitch. She applied a drop of superglue. Her cheek was missing a few layers of skin, and she was going to have a matched set of very pronounced black eyes. Her nose was swollen and crooked, so she took advantage of her current painless state to push it back into shape as well as she could. The pain would return fairly soon, though she'd given herself the maximum dose of the drug she'd privately named Survive. It wasn't meant to work long-term. It was just for making it through an attack like the one she'd just endured. Kind of like the adrenaline her body naturally generated, just much more powerful, and with some opiates to block the pain. Survive wasn't on the books. Her list of duties had not included creating anti-torture concoctions, but she'd thought it might be something she'd need someday, and she'd been right. This wasn't the first time she'd used it. She'd overreacted to those earlier assassination attempts, but it was the first time she'd actually suffered through a decent beating with Survive in her system. She was pleased with its performance. She didn't have anything to stabilize her nose with, so she would have to try to be more careful with her face for a while. Luckily, she was a back sleeper. The face was going to be a problem, a big problem. She couldn't exactly walk into a grocery store right now and escape notice. When she had done everything she could think of to do, she lay on the cot for 10 minutes, just gathering her strength, or what was left of it. The drug still made her feel strong, but she knew she'd sustained some damage. There would be repercussions to deal with. She needed time to rest and heal. Time no one was going to give her. Chapter 9. She decided to wake Daniel up. Once Batman came around, which he probably would in about 15 minutes or so, the conversation was not going to be very genteel. She wanted a chance to explain and apologize before the shrieking and the death threat started. She reset the protocols on the computer. The chemical mixture in the air had long since dispersed, so she didn't need the gas mask inside the tent anymore. She grabbed the other mask, then tucked both sets of straps through her belt, keeping them close. She pulled Daniel's IV first. She didn't want him tethered to anything at all when he woke up. He'd had enough of that. His veins were still looking good. It was easy to inject the solution into the antecubital fossa of his other elbow. She sat on the edge of the table beside him, so close to the floor that her knees were up by her shoulders, and waited. He came to slowly, blinking against the overhead lights. He raised one hand to shade his eyes. Then awareness hit. He stared at his hand, free, bandaged, and then his eyes darted around the bright room.
"Alex?"
he asked quietly. "Right here." He turned toward her gingerly, moving his legs under the blanket, checking to see if he was still bound.
"What is happening now?"
he asked cautiously, his eyes still struggling to focus. "I believe you, and I'm very sorry for what I did to you." She watched him process that. Carefully, he raised himself up on one elbow, then clutched at the blanket, realizing again that he was naked. It was funny how non-medical people reacted to that. Physicians were fairly relaxed about nudity in general. She felt exactly the same about nudity as any other doctor, but he wouldn't assume that. She should have put on her lab coat.
"You do believe me?"
he asked. "Yes. I know you're not the person I thought you were. I was misled." He sat up a little farther, moving warily, waiting for something to hurt. He should feel fine, though, just tired from the muscle spasms. And his upper thigh would be a little sore when the local wore off. He started, and then froze.
"What happened to your face?"
"It's a long story. Can I say something before I get into it?" His expression was full of concern. For her? No, that couldn't be right.
"Okay,"
he agreed hesitantly. "Look, Daniel, what I told you before was true. I don't like hurting people. I didn't like hurting you. I only do that when I think the other option is much more horrible. I have never in my life done this before. Hurt a totally innocent person. Never. Not every person I've been asked to interrogate was as depraved as the rest, but all of them were at least part of the plot. I've long since realized that my old bosses will stoop to almost anything, but I still can't believe that they set me up to interrogate someone entirely guiltless." He thought about it for a few seconds.
"Are you asking me to forgive you?"
"No, I'm not asking for that. I would never ask for that. But I wanted you to know. I never would have hurt you if I hadn't truly believed it would save lives. I am so sorry."
"And what about the drug dealer? The virus?"
he asked anxiously. She frowned. "I've received some new information. Apparently, De La Fuentes was taken care of."
"No one is going to die?"
"Not because of a weaponized virus spread by a drug czar, no."
"So that's good, right?"
She sighed. "Yeah, I guess that's the silver lining of what happened here."
"Now will you tell me what happened to your face? Did you have an accident?"
Again with the concern. "No, my injuries are related to that new information I mentioned." She wasn't sure how to break it to him. Sudden indignation. His shoulders tensed.
"Somebody did that to you? On purpose? For hurting me?"
His mind certainly didn't work like someone in her line of business. Things that would be obvious to anyone who had ever worked on any facet of a mission were totally foreign to him. "Essentially," she answered.
"Let me talk to him,"
he insisted.
"I believe you too. I know you didn't want to do it. You were trying to help."
"That's not really the issue. Daniel, you know when I was showing you those pictures before and you recognized the person in them, but you didn't want to tell me who it was?" His face closed up. He nodded. "You can relax. I'm not asking you to confess anything. This isn't a trick. I didn't know you had a twin. They covered that up in the files so I wouldn't—"
"No, but it wasn't Kevin,"
he interrupted.
"That's what I didn't understand. It looked just like him, but it's impossible. Kevin is dead. He died in prison last year. I don't know who it could be unless we were actually triplets, and I think Mom might have noticed that."
He trailed off, watching her expression change.
"What?"
he asked. "I'm not sure how to tell you this."
"Tell me what?"
She hesitated for a moment, then stood up and walked around the table. His eyes tracked her. Then he sat up, bunching the blanket carefully around his waist. She stopped and looked down. His eyes followed hers. Kevin Beach's face was turned toward the table where Daniel sat. It was curious how much more he looked like Daniel when he was unconscious, all the tension in his expression erased.
"Kevin,"
Daniel whispered, face going white, then flushing bright red. "Did you know your brother worked for the CIA?" she asked quietly. He looked up, aghast.
"No. No, he was in prison. He'd been dealing drugs."
He shook his head.
"Things got bad after our parents died. Kev went off the deep end. He self-destructed. I mean, after West Point."
West Point?
Yes, he said, face blank. Obviously, the significance was lost on him. Before the drugs, he was a different person. Graduated near the top of his class. He was accepted to Ranger School.
Daniel trailed off, assessing her frown. Of course. Alex suppressed a sigh, upset with herself for not worrying more about the file's gaps in information, for not taking the time to find a faraway library where she could have safely searched all Daniel's family connections. Daniel looked down at his brother again.
He's not dead now, is he?
Just sleeping. He'll wake up in a few minutes. Daniel's brow furrowed.
What is he wearing?
Some kind of military armored suit, I guess. Not my specialty.
The CIA,
he whispered. Black ops, I would imagine. Your brother didn't self-destruct, he just switched divisions. That's why he was involved with the drug lord. His wide eyes turned sober.
He was helping the drug lord with the virus?
He whispered. No, shutting him down, actually. We're basically on the same side, though you wouldn't know it to look at us. She nudged his supine form with her toe. Daniel's head whipped back up to hers.
Did Kevin do that to your face?
Funny, but he sounded more upset about that than the idea that his brother was a murderous criminal. Yes, and I did this to him. Another nudge.
But he's going to wake up.
Alex nodded. She was a little conflicted about Batman waking up. It wasn't going to be pretty. And Daniel was being so nice about everything. About her. That would probably change once his brother started talking. He smiled just a little, staring at his brother's exposed back.
So, you won?
She laughed. Temporarily.
He's a lot bigger than you are.
I would say I was smarter, but I made some pretty huge mistakes in my security here. I think I was just luckier this time. Daniel started to get to his feet, then paused.
Are my clothes around here anywhere?
Sorry, no. I thought there might be tracking devices in them. I had to cut them off you and ditch them. He blushed again, all the way down to that small spot on his chest. He cleared his throat.
Why would someone track me?
Well, at the time, I thought the drug lord might be monitoring you, or that you were a trap, and my department would use you to track me, which is a little bit closer to the truth, actually. He frowned.
I am so confused.
She gave him the bullet points version as succinctly as possible. While she was talking, he got to his feet, wrapping the blanket around his waist like an oversized towel, and started pacing back and forth in front of his brother's body.
They tried to kill you 4 times?
He asked when she was finished. 5 now, I think, she said, looking pointedly at Batman.
I can't believe Kevin is alive.
He sighed. He folded his long legs under the blanket and settled to the floor beside his brother's head.
I can't believe he lied to me. I can't believe he let me think he was a criminal. I can't believe he let me think he died. I can't believe how many times I visited him. Do you know how long it takes to drive from D.C. to Milwaukee?
He stared in silence at his brother. She let him have a moment. She couldn't imagine how she would feel if Barnaby walked back into her life without warning. How did you process something like that?
When he wakes up, Daniel murmured gently, I'm going to punch him in the throat.
Well, that was one way to process it.
Why did you handcuff him?
Daniel wondered. Because as soon as he's conscious, he's going to try to kill me. Wide eyes again.
What?
It's not hard to understand. All he knew when he came through the roof was that someone was hurting you. He let me live only because he wasn't sure if you were really okay. For example, maybe I would have to give you an antidote or something. I'm pretty sure if I hadn't gotten the upper hand for a second, the minute you woke up, he would have shot me. She could see Daniel didn't believe her. He shook his head, eyebrows pulling down, upset. A thatch of curls flopped onto his forehead, still a little damp with sweat. It was amazing how short a time had actually passed, but everything had changed, and she needed a new plan. Was it safe to go back to her most recent home, the place she'd been living when Karsten had contacted her? It would certainly be easiest.
There was food there, and no one would have to see her face for as long as it took to look normal again. She didn't think she'd compromised the house. But then what? How much of her nest egg had she blown through for this stupid trap? How long would she be able to keep going on what she had? Karsten knew about her online presence, so it would be a risk to go looking for a real job on the internet. The department didn't have to know where she was to tie her hands. Something touched her leg, and she jumped. It was just Daniel's hand.
I didn't mean to scare you. Sorry.
Don't apologize.
You just look so worried. Don't. I can talk to Kevin.
She smiled humorlessly. Thanks, but I'm not worrying about Lazarus at the moment.
You're worried about your department.
She turned away, walked to her computer, and rested her hand against the spacebar. Hopefully it didn't appear deliberate. Yeah, she said without looking at him. You could say that. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw a short hitch in Kevin's breathing before it evened out again. Good thing she'd moved away. She definitely didn't want to be within reach now.
Is there anything I can do to help?
Daniel asked seriously. She stared at him, surprised to feel actual tears pricking her eyes. I don't think I deserve your help, Daniel. He made an exasperated noise in the back of his throat. And really, she continued, you've got enough problems of your own. It was clear he hadn't thought through the long-term implications of what had happened.
What do you mean?
You're a target now, too. You've just learned a lot of things that you're not supposed to know. If you go home, if you go back to your normal life, they'll end it.
Not go back?
He was totally stunned. Pity welled up inside her. Again, she remembered how far away his kind of life was from hers. He probably thought he could fix everything by hiring a lawyer or writing to his congressman.
But Alex, I have to go back. My team is in the championship tournament.
She couldn't help it. She started laughing, and the pricking tears turned into real drops. She saw his expression and waved her hand in apology. Sorry, she said, gasping. It's not funny at all. I'm sorry. I think my painkillers are beginning to wear off. He got quickly to his feet.
Do you need something? Aspirin?
No, I'm good. I just have to come down from the high. He walked over and rested one hand lightly on her arm. She felt the sting, the bruising there just beginning to grow sensitive. It was going to be a very rough day.
Are you sure?
He asked.
Can't I get you something?
Why are you being so nice to me? He looked at her in surprise.
Oh, I guess I see your point.
Finally, she thought. She'd been starting to worry that maybe the drug she'd used to kidnap him, follow the leader, had some permanent neurological effects they'd missed in the trials. Look, she said, after I have a little chat with Kevin, I'll get my stuff together and then I'll give you the key so you can unlock your brother once I'm in my car.
But where will you go? What about your injuries?
You're being nice again, Daniel.
Sorry.
She laughed once more. The sound hitched on the end, like a sob.
Seriously, though, he said, you don't have to leave right away. You look like you could use some sleep and some medical attention.
Not on the agenda. She eased herself into the desk chair, hoping he couldn't see just how stiff and weary she felt.
I wish we could talk some more, Alex. I don't know what I'm supposed to do now. If you really mean it that I can't go back, I don't even know how to begin to think about that.
I do mean it, and I'm sorry, but I think your brother can probably fill you in on the details. I imagine he's better at hiding than I am. He looked at his brother, wearing half of a batsuit, doubtfully.
You think?
Don't you agree, Kevin? She asked. She was fairly sure he'd been awake for at least a few minutes. Daniel fell to his blanketed knees next to his brother.
Kev?
Slowly, with a sigh, Kevin turned his head to look at his brother.
Hey, Danny.
Daniel leaned in and embraced him awkwardly. Kevin patted Daniel's arm with his free hand.
Why, Kev? Why?
Daniel asked, his voice muffled in Kevin's hair.
Trying to keep you safe, kid. Safe from people like that.
And he added several quite unflattering descriptions of her. She knew all the individual words, but the combinations were fairly unusual. Daniel jerked away and cuffed Kevin's head.
Don't talk like that. Are you kidding me? That psychopath tortured you.
Not for very long. And she only did it because...
Are you defending that?
More creativity. Daniel smacked him again. Not hard, but Kevin wasn't in a mood to play. He grabbed Daniel's hand and twisted it into an unpleasant position. He got his right knee pulled up under his body and tried to yank away from the table. The locked wheels whined against the floor as the metal slab shifted a few inches. Her eyes widened. The table had to weigh at least 400 pounds. She scooted her chair back. Daniel wrestled with his free hand, trying to break his brother's hold. I'll gas you again if you don't let go of him, she promised Kevin. The bad news is, the chemical I'm using does have a few negative side effects. It kills only a small percentage of your brain cells with each use, but it adds up over time. Kevin dropped Daniel's hand, glared once at her, and then focused on his brother.
Danny, listen to me, he hissed. You're bigger than her. Get the keys and get me out of these.
Suddenly, his face froze, went beet red, and the vessels in his forehead pulsed in time with his words.
Where is my dog?
He shouted at her. The table squealed another inch across the floor. Sleeping in the back room? She had to work to keep her voice even. It weighs less than you. The gas will take longer to wear off. Daniel was rubbing his wrist and looking confused.
Dog? If he's not 100%,
Kevin threatened. Your dog will be fine. Now, I need to ask you a few questions. Daniel looked up at her, wild-eyed.
What?
She glanced at him and shook her head. Not like that. Just a normal exchange of information. She turned back to Kevin. Can we talk calmly for just a few minutes, please? Then I'll get out of your hair.
In your dreams, psycho. We've got unfinished business.
She raised her eyebrows over her blooming black eyes. Can we talk for a few minutes before I put you into a medically induced coma, then?
Why would I do anything for you?
Because your brother's safety is involved, and I can tell that's something that matters to you.
You're the one who pulled Danny into this.
That's not entirely accurate. This is as much about you as it is about me, Kevin Beach. He glowered at her.
I already don't like you, lady. You really don't want to make that feeling stronger.
Relax, Black Ops. Hear me out. Daniel's eyes were flashing back and forth like he was a spectator at a tennis match. Kevin glared. The CIA thinks you're dead? She asked. He grunted. I'll take that as a yes.
Yeah, that's a yes, you...
Daniel backhanded the top of Kevin's head and then scooted out of the way as Kevin made a grab for him. Then Kevin refocused on her.
And I'm going to keep it that way. I'm retired.
She nodded, considering. She opened a blank document on her computer and typed a line of random medical terms.
What are you typing?
Notes. Typing helps me think. Actually, she was sure he would notice if she kept accidentally touching the computer to keep it awake, and she might need that trap again today.
So what does it matter? I died. Danny shouldn't be a target anymore.
I was a target?
Daniel asked. Kevin propped himself up on his right elbow and leaned toward his brother.
I worked deep undercover, kid. Anyone who connected me to you would have used you as leverage. It's one of the downsides of the job. That's why I went through the whole prison charade. As long as on paper Kevin Beach was away, the bad guys wouldn't know about you. I haven't been Kevin in a long time. But when I visited, the agency hooked me up with the warden. When you were on your way, if I could, I'd fly in and do the meeting. If I was unavailable... That's why you were in isolation. Or they said you were. Not for fighting.
Yep.
I can't believe you lied to my face for so many years. It was the only thing I could do to keep you safe. What about maybe picking a different job?
She broke in when the vessels in Kevin's head started to swell again.
could we put the reunion drama on hold for the moment? I think I've got it pieced together. Listen, please, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong, I'm sure. Two nearly identical faces regarded her with nearly opposite expressions. Okay, she continued. So, Kevin, you faked your death after the De La Fuentes job, right? Kevin didn't respond in any way, so she went on. That was 6 months ago, you said. I can only conclude that the agency was concerned about the lack of a body.
Oh, there was a body.
Then they were concerned about the inconsistencies with that body, she snapped, and they thought of a plan to draw you out just in case. He frowned. He knew his former bosses, just like she knew hers. Daniel's your weak spot, like you said. They're leverage against you. They know this. They decide to take him, see what happens. But they know what you're capable of, and no one wants to be the one left holding the bag if you do turn up alive.
But,
Kevin started to say. He stopped himself, probably realizing whatever argument he'd been about to make wouldn't hold up. You're a problem for the CIA. I'm a problem for my department. At the top, the people involved in both our former workplaces are pretty tight. So they offer me a deal. Do a job for us, and we'll call off the hunt. They must have had it worked out pretty solidly before they contacted me, fixed the files, got ready to feed me the crisis story I can't turn my back on. None of them make a move on me because they've already sacrificed 3 assets trying, and they don't want any more losses. They knew I'd come in prepared for anything like that. But if you were really good, maybe I wouldn't be prepared enough for you. Kevin's face had changed while she was working it out.
And either way, he concluded, one problem gets solved.
It's elaborate. Sounds more like your agency than mine, if I had to guess.
Yeah, it does sound like them, actually.
He agreed grudgingly. So they put us together like 2 scorpions in a jar and shake it up, she said. One way or another, they get a win on the books. Maybe if they're really, really lucky, we take each other out. Or at least weaken the winner. No chance of any losses on their side. And they had weakened her, reduced her assets, and damaged her physically. A partial success for them.
And it doesn't bother them that my brother is also stuck in the jar?
He said furiously.
Only he's an ant, not a scorpion. They just throw him into the mix, don't even care that he's completely defenseless.
Hey, Daniel protested.
No offense, Danny, but you're about as dangerous as hand-knitted socks.
Daniel opened his mouth to respond, but a loud whine from the bunk room interrupted. The whine was quickly followed by angry snarls and a few sharp barks, then a strident clawing at the wooden door. She was glad she'd gone the extra mile in securing the wolf.
He's upset, Kevin accused.
The dog is fine. There's a toilet back there. It won't even get dehydrated. Kevin just raised his eyebrows, not as concerned about the animal as she would have expected. The clawing and snarling didn't let up.
You really brought a dog?
Daniel asked.
More of a partner.
He looked at her.
Well, what now? Their plan failed.
Narrowly. He grinned.
We could go another round.
As much as I would dearly love to inject a few things into your system, I'd rather not give them the satisfaction.
Fair enough.
The dog was scratching and growling in an unbroken stream through all of this. It was getting on her nerves. I do have a plan. Kevin rolled his eyes.
I bet you always have a plan, don't you, Shorty?
She regarded him with flat eyes. I can't rely on muscle, so I rely on brains. It appears you have the opposite problem. He laughed derisively.
Kev?
Daniel interjected.
I'd like to point out that you are chained up on the floor. Shut up, Danny.
Please, boys, if I could get 1 more second of your time. She waited till they looked at her. Here's the plan. I write an email to my ex-boss. I tell him I got the truth, the real truth, and both of you are out of the picture. I really don't appreciate the manipulation. If he tries to contact me in any way again, I'm making a personal visit to his kitchen pantry.
You claim the win?
Kevin asked in a disbelieving voice.
Please.
Chained on the floor, Daniel murmured under his breath. It's a gift, she snapped back.
You get to be dead again. No one is looking for either of you. Kevin's cynical expression dissolved. For a second, the twin thing was a lot more evident. The sound of the dog was like a howling wood chipper in the next room. She hadn't really planned to stick around for her security deposit, but it clearly was not an option now.
Why would you do that for us?
Kevin asked. I'm doing it for Daniel. I owe him. I should have been smarter. I shouldn't have taken the bait. It was all so completely obvious now, how easily she'd slipped through their surveillance, because there hadn't been any. How simple it had been to snatch Daniel because no one was trying to stop her. The heavy-handed way they'd given her a deadline with plenty of time for her to act. It was embarrassing.
Then what happens to you?
Daniel asked quietly. She almost had to read his lips over the noise of the dog. I haven't decided yet. She had learned a few things from this exercise in gullibility, maybe things they didn't want her to know. There weren't going to be any helicopters or elimination teams. Karsten, the one name she could be absolutely certain of at this point, and whoever else wanted her dead, had sent only the occasional lone assassin because that was all they had. Her enemies had been driven to this wild collaboration, and she knew it wasn't because the department didn't have the resources. It could only be because she wasn't common knowledge. And Karsten, and whoever his confederates were, couldn't afford to have her become so. She'd assumed, when she'd seen the obituary for Juliana Fortis and read about the cremation, that everyone involved was in on the scam. But what if it was just a few key people? What if Karsten had promised his superiors that the job would be done and then was afraid to admit he'd missed on the first SWAT? Or, revolutionary idea, what if most people at the department thought it was a lab accident, that she and Barnaby had mixed the wrong test tubes and punched out together? What if Karsten's superiors hadn't wanted her dead? What if only those few key individuals had wanted that, and now they had to keep their attempts to finish the job under the radar? That would change everything. It played. It fit with the facts. It made her feel stronger. The ones who had arranged her death had been afraid of what she knew, but they had never been afraid of her. Maybe it was time for that to change. There was a sudden ear-splitting noise, an explosive fragmenting of wood, and then the enraged snarling got a lot closer. Chapter 10. It took her 1 second to realize what had happened, and by that time, the rabid wolf was bounding into the tent. There was still a little bit of extra adrenaline in her system, apparently. She was on top of the desk before the animal was all the way inside, and her nervous system, not satisfied with that distance, launched her toward the PVC framework overhead before she had time to realize what she was doing. She caught hold with both hands, flipped her legs up, and crossed her ankles around the pipe, then wrapped her elbows tightly around as well. She turned her head to the side to see that the creature was right below her, big paws on the desk, as it strained to get its teeth into her. One paw mashed down on the keyboard, which was too bad. A little gassing would help a lot right now, and she already had both masks. The dog snarled and slavered under her while she tried to maintain her hold. She'd used the heavy-duty 5-inch diameter Class 200 pipe, but it was still shaking from her sudden attachment to it. She was sure it would bear her weight, unless someone attacked the base. Hopefully Kevin wouldn't think of that. Kevin started laughing. She could imagine how she looked.
"Who's chained to the floor now?" he asked.
"Still you," Daniel muttered.
At the sound of his master's voice, the dog gave a little whine and looked around. It dropped off the desk and went to examine Kevin, with one parting growl in her direction. Kevin patted its face while the dog leaned down to lick him, still whining anxiously.
"I'm okay, buddy. I'm good." "He looks just like Einstein," Daniel said, wonder in his tone.
The dog looked up, on guard at the sound of a new voice. Kevin patted Daniel's foot.
"Good boy. He's cool. He's cool."
It sounded like another command. And sure enough,
Dropping the wine, the huge beast went to Daniel with its tail wagging furiously. Daniel stroked the gigantic head like that was the most natural thing in the world.
"That's Einstein III," Kevin explained.
Daniel scratched his fingers through the thick coat appreciatively.
"He's beautiful."
Her arms were getting tired. She tried to readjust while still watching, and the dog bounded right back to the desk, snarling again. "Any hope if you're calling the dog off?" she asked, trying to keep her voice composed.
"Possibly, if you throw me the keys."
"And if I give you the keys, you won't kill me?"
"I already said I'd call the dog off. Don't get greedy."
"I think I'll just stay up here then, until the gas knocks you all out. Daniel's probably got enough brain cells to spare."
"See, I think I'll be okay, because even though Einstein can't reach you, Daniel can. And if the gas hits you after he relieves you of those masks, well, the unconscious fall to the floor won't kill you, obviously, but it won't do you any favors."
"Why would I do that?" Daniel asked.
"What?"
Kevin demanded.
"She's on our side, Kev." "Whoa there! Are you insane? There are two very different sides here, kid. Your brother is on one, and the sadist who tortured you is on the other. Which side are you on?"
"The side of reason, I guess."
"Good,"
Kevin grunted. "That's not your side, Kev."
"What?"
"Calm down. Listen, let me broker a truce here.
I can't believe you aren't reaching up there to throttle her yourself."
"She was only doing what you would have done in her place. Be honest. If you knew some stranger was going to kill millions of people and you needed to find out how to stop him, what would you do?"
"Find another solution. Like I did."
"Listen to me, Danny. You're out of your league here. I know people like her. They're sick. They get some twisted high off other people's pain. They're like venomous snakes. You can't turn your back on them."
"She isn't like that. And what's the big deal to you anyway? I'm the one who got tortured. What do you even know about that?"
Kevin just stared at him, deadpan, for one moment, then pointed with his secured left hand to his secured left foot. He wiggled his four toes. It took a few seconds for comprehension to hit, and then Daniel sucked in a horrified gasp. "Amateurs," she scoffed from the ceiling.
"I don't know," Kevin said coolly. "They seem pretty good to me."
"Did they get what they were after?" He made a disbelieving noise in the back of his throat.
"Are you kidding?"
She raised one eyebrow. "Like I said."
"And you could have made me talk."
Her lips pulled into a bleak smile. "Oh, yes." Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Daniel shudder convulsively. The dog was quiet now, but still alert underneath her. It seemed unsure of the situation, with its master talking so calmly to its target.
"Hey, I know who you are,"
Kevin said suddenly.
"Yeah, the girl. I heard rumors about you. Exaggerations. They said you'd never had a miss. You were batting 1,000.
"Not an exaggeration." His expression was skeptical.
"You worked with the old guy. The mad scientist, they called him. The agency called you the Oleander. Honestly, I didn't put it together at first because I heard you both died in some lab accident. And also, I always imagined the Oleander was pretty."
Daniel started to say something, but she interrupted. "Oleander? That's just awful."
"Huh? A flower?"
she growled to herself. "That's so passive. A poison doesn't do the poisoning. It's just an inert agent."
"What did your unit call you?"
"The chemist. And Dr. Barnaby was not a mad scientist. He was a genius."
"Tomato, tomato,"
Kevin said.
"Back to the truce I was speaking of,"
Daniel interjected. The way he looked at her hands and arms, she thought he might have guessed how much they were hurting her.
"Alex will give me the keys, and Kevin, you will call off Einstein. When I think everything is under control, I'll let you out. Alex, do you trust me?"
He looked up at her with his wide, clear hazel eyes, while Kevin spluttered in inarticulate fury. "The keys are in the left front pocket of my jeans.
I'd hand them to you, but if I loosen my hands, I'll fall.
Be careful! She'll stab you!
Daniel didn't even seem to have heard his brother's warning. When he climbed onto the chair, his head was actually higher up than hers. He had to stoop, his head pressed against the foam roof. He put one hand under her back, supporting some of her weight, while he fished gently in her pocket for the key.
I'm sorry my brother is so socially inept, he whispered. He's always been that way. Don't you apologize for me, you moron, Kevin yelled.
Daniel smiled at her, then took the key and stepped down. She was actually in agreement with Kevin. How could Daniel be like this with her? Where was the totally natural resentment? Where was the human desire for retribution?
I've got the keys, Kev. Do you have a lead for the dog? A lead? Einstein doesn't need a leash.
What's your suggestion, then? Kevin glared at him balefully.
Fine. I'd rather kill her myself anyway.
He whistled at the dog.
At ease, Einstein.
The dog, who had followed Daniel anxiously as he approached Alex, now went calmly to its master's head and sat down, his tongue lolling out in what appeared to be a smile, a very toothy smile.
Let me out. Ladies first.
Daniel climbed up on the chair again and offered her his hand.
Need some help?
I think I've got it. She dropped her legs toward the desk, her arms extending as she tried to touch down with her toes. How had she gotten up here? Her tired hands started to slip.
Here you go.
Daniel caught her by the waist as she fell and set her carefully on her feet, one on the desk, the other with a clang in the middle of the prop tray. His blanket skirt loosened. He quickly grabbed the fabric and tightened it.
I can't believe this, Kevin muttered.
Alex stood cautiously, watching the dog.
If he tries anything, Daniel murmured to her, I'll distract him. Dogs love me. Einstein isn't stupid, Kevin growled. Let's not find out. Now your turn.
He climbed down from the chair and crouched beside Kevin. Alex slithered off the desk as quietly as she could, one hand reaching out for the keyboard. The dog didn't respond. It was watching Daniel release its master. She opened the system preferences. Screensaver wasn't the only way to release the sleeping gas, and she still had both masks. But she knew that would just make things difficult. She would have to trust that Daniel could handle Kevin, for now. She eased herself into the chair. Daniel had started with the ankle, and it was going slowly. He was keeping one hand on his blanket.
Just give it to me. I'll do it,
Kevin said.
Be patient.
Kevin huffed loudly. The key turned, and Kevin was immediately on his feet, crouching beside his tethered arm. He snatched the key from Daniel's hand and had his wrist free in less than a second. He stood tall, stretching his neck and rolling his back muscles. The torso pieces of his bat suit hung down like an avant-garde skirt. The dog kept still at his feet. Kevin turned to Alex.
Where are my guns?
Backseat of the car. Kevin stalked out of the tent without another word, the dog at his heels. Don't open any doors or windows, she called after him. Everything's armed again.
Is the car booby-trapped?
He called back. No. A second later.
Where are the magazines? Hey, where are the firing pins?
Pins in the fridge, bullets in the toilet.
Oh, come on!
Sorry.
I want my Sig Sauer back.
She frowned and didn't answer. She got up stiffly. She might as well disarm the traps. It was time to go. Daniel was standing in the middle of the tent, staring down at the silver table. He had one hand wrapped around the IV pole as if for support. He seemed to be in a daze. She went hesitantly to stand beside him. Are you going to be okay? She asked.
I have no idea. I can't understand what I'm supposed to do next.
Your brother will have a plan. He's been living somewhere. He'll have a place for you. He looked down at her.
Is it hard?
What?
Running. Hiding.
She opened her mouth to say something soothing, then thought better of it. Yeah. It's pretty hard. You get used to it. The worst part is the loneliness, and you won't have to deal with that, so that's one minor plus.
She kept to herself the thought that loneliness might be a better companion than Kevin Beach.
Are you lonely a lot?
She tried to laugh it off. Only when I'm not scared, so no, not too often.
Have you decided yet what you're going to do next?
No. The face is a problem. I can't walk around like this. People will remember me, and that's not safe. I'll have to hide somewhere until the swelling goes down and the bruises fade enough to cover with makeup.
Where do you hide? I don't understand how this works.
I may have to camp out for a while. I've got a bunch of subsistence food and plenty of water. By the way, don't drink the water in the fridge without checking with me first. The left side is poisoned. Anyway, I may just find some place remote and sleep in the car until I've recuperated enough. He blinked a couple of times, probably thrown by the poison thing. Maybe we can do something about your problem with conspicuousness, she said more lightly, touching his blanket with one finger. I think there might be some clothes up at the house. I doubt they'll fit you, but they're better than what you've got. A wave of relief passed over his face.
I know it's a small thing, but I think that would actually help quite a bit.
Okay, let me go turn off the lethal gas trap. In the end, she did surrender the Sig Sauer, although with some regret. She liked its weight. She'd have to find her own. The farmhouse owner's belongings were stashed in the attic in a set of dressers from 6 or 7 decades back. The man was obviously a lot shorter and wider than Daniel. She left Daniel to sort that out while she went back to the barn to pack up the car. Kevin was there when she entered, tightly rolling a big swath of black fabric into a manageable armload. It took her a moment to realize the fabric was a parachute. She kept her distance as he worked, but the truce felt solid. For some reason, Daniel had put himself between her and his brother's animosity. Neither she nor Kevin understood why he was doing it, but Kevin cared too much about Daniel to violate his trust today. Not when he was still reeling over years of lies. Or that's what she told herself to muster up the courage needed to walk past the dog to her car. She was an old hand at packing, and it didn't take her very long. When she'd come out to meet Karsten, she'd stowed her things and dismantled the security at the rental house, just in case she didn't make it back. One of her nightmares was that the department would get her while she was out, and then some innocent, unsuspecting landlord would enter the premises and die. She'd stashed everything outside D.C., then come back for it when she'd started setting up for Project Interrogate the schoolteacher. Now she fitted it all into the worn black duffels. The pressurized canisters, the miles of lead wires, the battery packs, the rubber-encased vials of components, the syringes, the goggles, the heavy gloves, her pillow, and her sleeping bag. She packed her props and some of the new things she'd picked up. The restraints were a good find, and the cot was decently comfortable and folded down into a small rectangle. She put her computer in its case, grabbed the little black box that was just a red herring, like her locket, pulled down the long cables, and rolled up the extension cords. She was going to have to leave the lights, which was a bummer. They hadn't been cheap. She dismantled the tent, leaving just a pile of meaningless foam and PVC pipe, and shoved the table back to where she'd found it. There wasn't anything to do about the holes she'd drilled. She could only hope that she'd obfuscated things enough that the owners would only be confused and angry at the destruction rather than suspicious that something nefarious had happened here. There was a chance they'd report their destructive tenant to the authorities, but local police wouldn't be able to construe anything from the mess either. As long as certain words didn't go into the report, there was no reason for anyone in the government to notice. She was sure there were Airbnb stories of destruction much more interesting than this one. She shook her head at the door to the bunk room. The dog had chewed or clawed a hole 2 feet high and 1 foot wide right through the center of the solid wood door. At least it had only jumped over the car rather than eating it on its way out. She was finished loading the trunk when Daniel came back in.
"Nice capris," Kevin commented, winding the cable of his grappling hook into a neat coil.
Alex wondered if he'd climbed back up onto the roof to retrieve it, and if he had, how she'd missed that. It was true that Daniel's pants made it only halfway down his shins. The cotton shirt was a few sizes wide, and the sleeves were probably too short as well. He had them rolled to the elbows.
If only I had half a wetsuit, Daniel sighed. Then I would feel ready to face the world.
Kevin grunted.
I'd have a whole wetsuit if the psycho wasn't such a perv.
Don't flatter yourself. I was looking for weapons. Daniel watched her close the trunk.
Are you leaving?
Yes. I need to get somewhere safe so I can sleep. She imagined she looked haggard enough that the explanation was a little redundant.
I was thinking, Daniel said, and then hesitated.
Kevin looked up from his rifle, alerted by Daniel's tone.
What were you thinking?
Kevin asked suspiciously.
Well, I was thinking about the scorpions in the jar. Alex said there were only two outcomes. One kills the other, or both die. And I imagine that the people who wanted to kill you thought the same thing. So?
Kevin said. So, there was a third option, she said, guessing the direction Daniel was headed. The scorpions walk away. They won't be expecting that. That's what will make you safe, Daniel.
But there's a fourth option, too, Daniel answered. That's what I've been thinking about.
Kevin cocked his head to the side. He clearly didn't get it. She did, just before Daniel said the words out loud.
What if the scorpions joined forces?
She pursed her lips, then relaxed them when that pulled at the split. Kevin groaned.
Stop messing around, Danny. I'm serious. They'd never expect that. And then we're twice as safe because we've got both dangerous creatures on the same team. Not happening.
She walked closer to him. It's a clever idea, Daniel. But I think some of the personnel issues might be too big to overcome.
Kev's not so bad. You'll get used to him.
I'm not bad?
Kevin snorted, peering through his sights. Daniel looked straight at her.
You're thinking about going back, aren't you? What you said about visiting the pantry?
Insightful for a civilian. I'm considering it. Kevin was giving them his full attention now.
Counter-strike?
It might work, she said. There's a pattern. And after looking at it, I think that maybe not so many people know about me. That's why they're going to such lengths to have a 50-50 chance at taking me out. I think I'm a secret. So if I can get rid of the people in on that secret, well, then nobody's looking for me anymore.
Does that hold true for me?
Kevin wanted to know.
If they're relying on this to get to me, do you think I might be a secret too?
It's logical.
How will you know who's in on it?
If I could be in D.C. when I send my little note to Karsten, I could watch to see who he goes running to. If it's really a secret, they won't be able to do it in the office.
They'll know you're close. The IP will give you away.
Maybe we could work together in a limited way. One of you could send the email for me from a distance.
What's your experience in surveillance?
Kevin demanded abruptly. I've had a lot of practice in the last few years.
Do you have any formal training?
I'm a scientist, not a field agent. He nodded.
I'll do it.
She shook her head. You're dead again, remember? You and Daniel get to disappear now. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
That's a stupid saying. If the Trojans had looked in the horse's mouth, they might have won that war.
Forget the saying. I'm trying to make things up to Daniel. Daniel was quietly watching the back and forth again.
Look, Oleander, I have had training. A lot. No one is going to catch me watching, and I will see more than you will. I have a place to stash Daniel where he'll be totally safe, so that's not an issue. And if you're right, and this Karsten guy goes running to his co-conspirators, he'll show me who in the agency thought this up. I'll see who put Danny in danger to get to me. Then I can clean up my problem, and you can clean up yours.
She thought it through, trying to be objective. It was hard to keep her dislike for Daniel's brother from coloring her analysis. That dislike wasn't fair. Wouldn't she have felt the same way as Kevin if it were her sibling shackled to a table, done the same things insofar as she was capable? but she still really wished she could inject him with something agonizing. Just once. First of all, don't call me Oleander, she said. He smirked. Second, I see what you're saying. But how do we coordinate? I've got to go under for a while. She pointed to her face.
You owe her for that, Daniel said. If you have a safe place for me, maybe she should go there too. At least until her injuries have healed.
I don't owe her anything, except maybe another punch in the face, Kevin growled.
Daniel bridled and took a step toward his brother. Kevin held up his hands in an I surrender motion and sighed.
But we're going to want to move quick, so that might be the easiest arrangement. Besides, then she can give us a ride. The plane's a loss. I had to bail out on the way down. I had us hiking out of here.
Daniel opened his eyes wide in disbelief. Kevin laughed at his expression, then turned to her with a smile. He looked at the dog, then back to her, and his smile got bigger.
I think I might enjoy having you at the ranch, Oleander.
She gritted her teeth. If Kevin had a safe house, that would solve a lot of her problems. And she could spike his food with a violent laxative before she left.
Her name is Alex, Daniel corrected. I mean, I know it's not, but that's what she goes by.
He looked at her.
Alex is okay, right?
It's as good as any other name. I'll stick with it for now. She looked at Kevin. You and the dog are in the back. Chapter 11. Once upon a time, when she was a young girl named Juliana, Alex used to fantasize about family road trips. She and her mother had always flown on the few vacations they took, if duty visits to ancient grandparents in Little Rock actually qualified as vacations. Her mother, Judy, didn't like to drive long distances. It made her nervous. Judy had often said that far more people were killed in car accidents than in plane crashes, though she was a white-knuckle flyer too. Juliana had grown up unfazed by the dangers associated with travel, or germs, or rodents, or tight spaces, or any of the many other things that upset Judy. By default, she had to be the level-headed one. Like most only children, Juliana thought siblings would be the cure to the loneliness of her long afternoons doing homework at the kitchen table while she waited for Judy to get home from the dentist's office she managed. Juliana looked forward to college and dormitories and roommates as a dream of companionship, except when she got there, she found that her life of relative solitude and adult responsibility had rendered her unsuited to cohabitation with normal 18-year-olds. So the sibling fantasy took a beating, and by her junior year, she had her own small studio apartment. The fantasy about a big, warm family road trip, however, had survived. Until today. To be fair, she would probably have been in a better mood if her entire body hadn't felt like one huge, throbbing bruise. Also, she had instigated the first argument, though quite unintentionally. When she drove across the county line, she'd rolled the window down and tossed out the small tracker she'd removed from Daniel's leg. She hadn't wanted to carry it with her for long, just in case, but she also didn't want to leave it right in the middle of her last base of operations. She thought she'd removed most of the evidence, but one could never be sure. Whenever she could muddy the trail, she took the time to do so. In the rearview mirror, she saw Kevin sit forward. He'd been able to retrieve a backpack he'd thrown from the plane when he jumped. Now he and Daniel looked fairly normal in jeans and long-sleeved t-shirts, one black, one gray, and Kevin had two new handguns.
What was that?
Kevin asked. Daniel's tracker.
What?
Kevin and Daniel said together. They spoke over each other.
I did have a tracker?
Daniel asked.
What did you do that for?
Kevin demanded. The dog looked up at Kevin's tone, but then seemed to decide everything was fine and stuck his face out the window again. She turned to Daniel first, looking up at him from under the ball cap that was supposed to be keeping her mangled face in shadow. How did you think your brother found you?
He tracked me? But where was it?
Sore spot on your inner right thigh. Keep the incision clean. Try not to let it get infected.
Do you know what a pain it was to get that in place?
Kevin grumbled. If you can track it, so can someone else. I didn't want to take chances with our position. Daniel turned around in the passenger seat to stare at his brother.
How could I not know about this? Do you remember, about 2 years after the tramp left you, a hot leggy blonde at that bar you go to when you're depressed? What's it called?
Luz, how do you even know about that? I never told you. Wait, did you have me followed?
I was worried about you after the tramp.
Her name is Lainey.
Whatever. I never liked her for you.
When did you ever like a girl for me? As far as I can recall, you only ever liked girls who wanted you. You took it as an insult if someone preferred me.
The point is, you weren't yourself. But having you followed was unrelated to the who followed me. It was just for a few months.
Who?
Some buddies of mine, not in the agency. A few cops I had a relationship with, a PI, for a little while.
What were they looking for?
Just making sure you were okay, that you weren't going to jump off a bridge or anything.
I can't believe you. Of all the... Wait a minute. The blonde? You mean that girl, what was her name, Kate? The one who bought me a drink and she was a spy?
She saw Kevin grinning in the rearview mirror.
No, she was actually a hooker. Kate isn't her real name.
Apparently, no one on the entire planet besides me uses his or her real name. I am living in a world of lies. I don't even know Alex's given name.
Juliana, she said at the same time Kevin did. They cast irritated looks at each other.
He knew?
Daniel asked her, offended. It came up while you were unconscious. It's the name I was given at birth, but it's really not me anymore. It doesn't mean much to me. I'm Alex for now. Daniel frowned, not entirely mollified.
Anyway,
Kevin went on in the tone of someone who was telling a joke he really enjoyed.
The blonde was supposed to get you back to your place, but you told her that your divorce wasn't finalized yet, and it didn't feel right.
Kevin laughed raucously. I couldn't believe it when I heard, but it was so you. I don't even know why I was surprised.
Hilarious. But I don't see how that little exchange got a tracking device into my leg.
It didn't. I just really liked that story. Anyway, that's what was such a pain. The hooker was easy to set up, and if you'd taken her home, having the tracker placed would have been enjoyable for you, at least. Getting you into your GP's office was a lot more work, but eventually I got a temp in the front office to call you in for a checkup. When you got there, you saw one of the new partners, a guy you'd never seen before.
Daniel's mouth popped open in disbelief.
He told me I had a tumor. A benign tumor. Which he took out right there in the office with a local anesthetic and immediately assured you was nothing. He didn't even charge you. Don't make it into a bigger thing than it was.
Are you serious? How could you?
Daniel was shouting at full volume now.
How do you justify these things to yourself? All these years you've been manipulating me, treating me like some laboratory animal who exists for your own amusement.
Hardly, Danny. I've been putting myself out trying to keep you safe. The agency wanted me to play dead from the very start, but I couldn't do that to you. Not after Mom and Dad. So I made a lot of promises and spent all my free weekends flying to Milwaukee to be a criminal.
Daniel's voice was calmer when he answered.
I drove. And was all that really necessary? Ask the poison girl. These kinds of jobs aren't for family people.
Daniel looked at her.
Is that true?
Yes. They like to recruit orphans, preferably only children. Like your brother told you before, relationships give the bad guys leverage. His tone mellowed further.
Are you an orphan?
I'm not sure. Never met my father. He could still be alive somewhere.
But your mother?
Uterine cancer. I was 19.
I'm sorry.
She nodded. There was a brief, very pleasurable moment of silence. Alex held her breath and prayed for it to last.
When I did finally let you think I was dead, Kevin began.
Alex turned the radio on and started searching through stations. Kevin did not get the hint. Daniel just stared through the windshield.
I was just starting with Enrique de la Fuentes. I could tell in the first few days that it was going to get out of hand. I knew what he'd done to the families of his enemies. It was time to set you free.
Free yourself from the visitation charade, you mean?
Daniel muttered.
Alex found a classical station and turned it up so she could hear it over Kevin's voice.
That's when I put the tracker in. I needed to know you were okay. No one was watching you anymore, just me.
Daniel grunted in disbelief. The music's volume was making Alex's head hurt more. She turned it down again.
It ended badly with the agency. The plan was to wait until things died down and I was forgotten, then get the face fixed. Eventually, I was coming back for you, kid. You wouldn't have recognized me at first, but I wasn't going to leave you thinking you were alone your whole life.
Daniel stared straight ahead. She wondered if he believed what his brother was saying. He was staggering under the weight of so many different kinds of betrayal. What happened with the agency? Alex asked. She really didn't want to get involved with this conversation, but it didn't look like Daniel was going to pursue it. Before joining this unlikely alliance, it hadn't mattered much to her one way or the other how Kevin had left the CIA. Now this information was important. It affected her, too.
When the job with the virus was done, and De La Fuentes was out of the picture, the agency wanted to pull me back in, but there were still some loose ends that bugged me. I wanted to nail it all down. It wouldn't have taken too much longer, and I was in a very unique position of power with the cartel. It was also a good opportunity to influence what happened there, who took over, what their agenda might be, while also getting solid information on the new structure. I couldn't believe the agency was calling me in. I refused to leave. I thought I had explained myself clearly, but I guess they didn't believe me. They must have thought I'd gone rogue, that I'd flipped and was choosing the cartel. Still makes no sense to me.
He shook his head.
I thought they knew me better.
What did they do? Daniel asked.
They burned me, ratted me out as an agent, told people I'd killed De La Fuentes, and those people came for revenge.
And got that revenge, as far as the CIA knew. She guessed.
Exactly.
Did you kill him? Daniel asked. De La Fuentes?
Part of the job. Have you killed a lot of people? Do you really want to know?
Daniel waited silently, not looking back.
Okay, fine. I've killed around 45 people, maybe more. I can't be sure about the number. You don't always have time to check for a pulse. Do you understand why I had to keep you separated from my life?
Daniel looked at Alex now.
Have you ever killed anyone?
3 times.
3. Oh, the people your company sent after you.
Yes.
Don't act like that makes her better than me,
Kevin interjected, angry.
I wasn't, Daniel started to say.
It was Kevin's turn to shout.
Ask her how many people she tortured before you. Ask her how long for each of them. How many hours? How many days? I just shoot people. Clean and fast. I would never do what she does to anyone, especially not an innocent civilian like...
Shut up, Daniel snapped. Just stop talking. Don't make this about her. Whatever pain she caused me, remember, you caused me more. It hurt more, and it lasted for much, much longer. You say you had a good reason. So did she. She didn't know she'd been lied to, that she'd been manipulated.
I know how that feels. As if she's just some blameless bystander here. I said shut up!
Daniel bellowed the last 2 words at a deafening decibel. Alex cringed. The dog whined, pulling its face inside and staring at its master.
Easy,
Kevin said, maybe to the dog. Daniel noticed her reaction.
Are you okay?
Actually, on top of a lot of other uncomfortable injuries, I've got a splitting headache.
I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it.
You look like you're going to crash, figuratively and literally. Want me to drive? You could try to get a nap.
She thought about that for a minute. She'd always had to do things on her own, but that was okay because then she knew they were done right. She didn't have someone to take turns driving with, but that was also okay because then she didn't have to trust someone. Trust was a killer. Still, she knew her limits. There was something so luxurious about the idea of being able to sleep and travel at the same time. And she did trust Daniel not to hurt her, not to betray her. Knowing it could be a huge mistake, she still trusted him.
Thank you, she said. That will be really nice. I'll pull over at the next exit.
The words sounded odd to her as they came out of her mouth,
like something someone would say on television, lines from one actor to another. But she supposed this was how normal human interactions generally sounded. She just didn't have a lot of those in her life. The silence was lovely for the 2 miles it took to get to the next exit. The peace made her even sleepier. Her eyelids were already doing the involuntary slow blink as she pulled off onto the dirt shoulder. No one spoke while they made the exchange. Kevin's head lolled back on his seat, eyes closed. Daniel touched her shoulder lightly as he passed her. Tired as she was, she didn't fall asleep immediately. At first, she thought it was the weirdness of having the car moving beneath her. Her body assumed from long habit that she would be the one at the wheel, and knew sleep was not allowed. She peeked at Daniel a few times from under her hat, just as reassurance. He knew how to drive a car. It was okay to relax. Sure, the seat was uncomfortable, but not much worse than her usual nighttime setup. She'd taught herself to get rest where she could, but her head felt too unrestrained. As soon as she realized this, she knew it was the gas mask she was missing. It had become part of her sleep ritual. Understanding the problem helped. She pulled her baseball cap farther down over her sore face and told herself to relax. She'd strung no wires today, no poison gas threatened. Everything was okay, she promised herself. It was dark when she woke up. She felt stiff, incredibly sore, and hungry. She also really had to pee. She wished she could have stayed asleep longer and thus avoided all of these unpleasant feelings, but the brothers were arguing again. She'd been out for a long time, she knew, so she couldn't blame them for forgetting her, but she wished they hadn't been arguing about her when she awakened.
But she isn't pretty, Kevin was saying as she began to surface.
You don't even know what she looks like, Daniel replied angrily. You mauled her face before you had a chance to introduce yourself.
It ain't just about the face, kid. She's built like a skinny 10-year-old boy.
You are the reason why women think all men are dogs. Also, the term is sylphid.
You read too many books.
You don't read enough.
I call it how it is.
You have limited perception.
Hey, it's okay, Alex interrupted. There was no graceful way into this conversation, but she didn't want to pretend to be asleep. No offense taken. She pulled the hat off her face and wiped away the drool that had leaked from her damaged lip.
Sorry, Daniel muttered. Don't worry about it. I needed to wake up.
No, I mean him.
Your brother's low opinion of my charms is its own special kind of compliment. Daniel laughed.
Good point. Kevin snorted.
Alex stretched and then groaned.
Let me guess. When you pictured the mad scientist's female partner, the mysterious Oleander, you saw a blonde, right?
She glanced at his face, suddenly rigid.
Yes, definitely a blonde. Large breasts, long tan legs, full lips, and huge blue doe eyes. Did I get it all? Or was there a French accent, too?
Kevin didn't respond. She glanced back at him. He stared out the window as if he weren't listening to her.
Got it in one, she laughed.
He was always a fan of the obvious, Daniel said.
I never saw one of those on the job, Alex told Daniel. I'm not saying such a creature wouldn't have the brains necessary, but really, why spend decades buried in unglamorous research when there are so many other options?
I've seen girls like that on the job, Kevin muttered.
Sure, agents, Alex allowed. That's a sexy job. Exciting. But trust me, lab coats really aren't that figure flattering, despite the slutty Halloween costume version.
Kevin went back to looking out the window.
How are you feeling? Daniel asked.
Ouch. Oh, sorry.
She shrugged. We should find a place to pause. I'm not going to be able to eat in a restaurant without someone calling the cops on you two. We'll have to get a motel somewhere, and then somebody's going to have to go out for groceries.
Room service not an option? Daniel wondered.
Those types of hotels notice when you pay cash,
Kevin explained before she could.
Sorry, bro. We'll have to rough it for a night.
Have you been driving all day? She asked.
No. Kevin and I switched out a couple of times.
Can't believe I slept through all that.
I think you needed it.
Yeah. I guess I've been burning the candle at both ends for too long.
So little time, Kevin muttered.
So many people to torture.
True story, she agreed lightly, just to annoy him. Daniel laughed. Daniel seemed so kind and gentle, more so than anyone she'd ever known, but he was definitely weird, possibly unstable. They found a small place on the outskirts of Little Rock. Alex thought she ought to recognize the city just a bit, but nothing reminded her of her childhood visits to the grandparents. Maybe the city had grown too much in the years since she'd been here. Maybe she was just in the wrong part. Somewhere nearby, her mother and her grandparents were buried. She wondered if that should make her feel something. But the place didn't really matter. She was no closer to them for being closer to the remains of their genetic material. Kevin insisted on making the arrangements at the front desk. It was probably for the best that Kevin took the lead now. Alex was out of commission, thanks to her face, and even if she had looked fine, he was still the expert. She knew only what she'd learned through theoretical research and a couple of years of trial and error. Kevin had been taught so much more, and he'd proved it all in the field. Daniel wasn't even an option. Oh, his face was fine, but his instincts were all wrong. Case in point, the way he argued when he saw that Kevin had gotten them only one room. It hadn't occurred to him that a hotel clerk would be more likely to remember a man who came in alone, yet paid cash for two rooms. And when Kevin parked three doors down from their actual room, Daniel didn't understand why. Misdirection, they explained. But it was foreign to everything Daniel had ever known, every habit he'd formed. He thought like a normal person who'd never had anything to hide. There was a lot he was going to have to learn. He even asked if they should get permission before they brought the dog into the room. It had only one bed, but Alex had been asleep for 12 hours straight, so she was happy to be the lookout. Kevin went out for a half hour and came back with cellophane-wrapped sandwiches, sodas, and a large bag of dog food. Alex scarfed her sandwich down and then chased it with a handful of Motrin. Einstein ate just as enthusiastically as she had, straight from the bag, but Daniel and Kevin were more relaxed about the food. Apparently, she'd missed a couple of stops at the drive-thru, too. A quick assessment of herself in the scratched bathroom mirror was not encouraging. Her nose was swollen to twice its normal size, red and bulbous. On the plus side, odds were it would heal up differently than it began, thus changing her appearance a little. Maybe not as aesthetically pleasing a result as she would get from plastic surgery, but probably less painful on the whole, or at least faster. Her black eyes were an impressive contradiction to their name, boasting a rainbow of colors from jaundice yellow to bilious green to sickly purple. Her split lip puffed out from either side of the scabby fissure like flesh balloons, and she hadn't even known you could develop bruises inside your mouth. There was one stroke of luck. She still had all her teeth. Getting a bridge would have been tricky. It was going to be a while before she could do anything. She really hoped Kevin's safe house lived up to the name. It worried her to be headed into the unknown. She hadn't prepared anything, and that was 100% unnerving. She showered and brushed her teeth, a more painful ordeal than usual, and slipped into her black leggings and a clean white tee. She'd reached the limits of her wardrobe. Hopefully, the safe house had a washing machine. Daniel was asleep when she came back out, stretched out on his stomach with one hand under the pillow and one arm falling over the edge of the bed, long fingers brushing the faded carpet. His sleeping face was really something else. Like before, when he was unconscious, his innocence and serenity didn't seem to belong in the same world that she did. Kevin wasn't in the room, and neither was the dog. Though she assumed the dog had needs, she couldn't bring her alert level down from orange-red until they'd returned. Kevin didn't acknowledge her, but the dog sniffed her once as it passed. Kevin lay down flat on his back, his arms at his sides, and immediately closed his eyes. He didn't move again for 6 hours. The dog jumped onto the end of the bed and curled up with its tail over Daniel's legs and its head pillowed on Kevin's feet. Alex sat in the only chair. The carpet was just too questionable for her to lie on the floor, and bent over her laptop, surfing the news. She wasn't sure when Daniel's disappearance would be noticed, or if it would be broadcast when it was. Probably not. Grown men wandered off all the time,
For example, her father. That sort of thing was too common to make waves unless there was some sensational detail, like dismembered body parts in his apartment. There was also no story yet about the crash of a single prop plane in West Virginia, no fatalities or injured found, still trying to locate the owner. But she doubted the news would merit more than just a note in a local online paper. When it did surface, there would be nothing in the report that would catch anyone's attention in D.C. She exhausted her search for information that might endanger them. It seemed that for now they were in the clear on that front, at least. What was Karsten thinking right at this moment? What was he planning? She wasn't due to deliver Daniel until Monday before school, and it was still only Saturday, well, almost Sunday. The department knew she wasn't going to crack Daniel. He had nothing to spill. They had to know she would eventually learn of the identical twins' existence. They must have been pretty sure of Kevin's status in the land of the living. They had expected him to be drawn out into the open early in the game, and they'd been right about that. The only thing they hadn't foreseen was that the torturer and the assassin might have a conversation. It would never have shaken out this way without Daniel's interference. He'd been a ploy for them, just a pawn moved into peril to lure the more critical players into the center of the board. They never would have guessed that he'd be a catalyst for change. She planned to hold true to her side of the bargain. She would take the role of victor, though that was really the losing role, and let Daniel and Kevin be dead. Dead again, in Kevin's case. But oh, how she wished that she could be the one to die. Wouldn't it be easy for the department to believe that someone like Kevin Beach, who'd toppled a cartel, had succeeded where they had failed? Wouldn't it make sense for them to stop looking then? What would it be like to disappear, but this time with no one searching for her? She sighed. Fantasies only made it harder. There was no point indulging in them. The men were both pretty well under, she was sure, so she dug into her bag and pulled out the pressurized canister she'd selected earlier. She had only the two gas masks, so nothing deadly tonight, just the airborne sleeping agent she'd had hooked up to her computer yesterday. It was enough. It would let her control the outcome if someone discovered them. After she'd strung the leads, only a double line, she wouldn't have to arm or disarm from outside the room tonight, she settled back into her chair. She glanced at the twins. Both were deep, peaceful sleepers. She wondered if that was a healthy habit for a spy. Maybe Kevin actually trusted her, enough to sound the alarm at the very least, and maybe even to deal with the problem without killing them all. She and the brothers were strange bedfellows indeed. How odd it was, watching over them. It felt wrong, and she'd expected that. But it also felt good, satisfying some need she'd never known was there. And that she hadn't expected. She spent some time thinking about her analysis of the situation, searching for flaws in her theory, but the more she looked at it, the more it made sense. Even the woeful lack of evolution in her would-be assassins, by the third try, someone should have been aware of her system and changed the approach, made sense in this light. There had never been any operation, just expendable individuals sent after her with little or no briefing. She thought through every conjecture two or three times and felt more confident than ever that she finally understood the ones hunting her. And then she was bored. What she wanted to do was log on to the website of Columbia University's pathology program and read the latest doctoral dissertations, but it wasn't safe to do that while the department was actively trying to locate her, which she was certain they were. The department couldn't trace every connection anyone made to her old interests, but this one might be too obvious. With a sigh, she put in earbuds, opened up YouTube, and started watching a tutorial about field stripping a rifle. It probably wasn't anything she'd ever need to know, but it couldn't hurt. Kevin woke up at 5:30 on the dot. He just sat up, as alert as if someone had flipped a switch to turn him on. He patted the dog once and headed toward the door. It took him only a second to notice the gas mask she was wearing and jerked to a stop. The dog, right on his heels, paused too and pointed its nose her direction, looking for whatever had upset its master. "Give me a sec," Alex said.
She got awkwardly to her feet, still aching and sore, whether more or less than at the beginning of the night, she couldn't tell, and walked stiffly to the door to undo her security precautions.
I didn't say you could do that,
Kevin said. She didn't look at him. I didn't ask for your permission, he grunted. It took her only a few seconds to clear his path. She removed her mask and used it to gesture to the door. Knock yourself out.
Knock you out,
she thought she heard him mutter as he passed her, but it was too low for her to be sure. The dog followed him, tail swishing so fast it blurred. She imagined the guy at the front desk probably wasn't paying any attention at this hour, but she still thought Kevin was pressing their luck a little. A screaming match with the management wasn't going to help them stay incognito. She rummaged through the food Kevin had bought last night. The remaining sandwiches weren't as appetizing as they had been 8 hours ago, but there was a box of cherry Pop-Tarts she'd missed before. She was working her way through the second pastry in the sleeve when Kevin and the dog came back.